Welcome aboard, you people. It's Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis for another day of broadcast insolence.
Welcome back from the weekend.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Very much.
Happy National Dog Day. International Dog Day.
Thank you.
Everywhere in the world, they're celebrating. And you being a grand dad of a grand puppy, you should be celebrating too.
Oh, canines, not just guys, on the prowl.
No, not that kind of dog.
Okay. All right. Just making sure.
Not the backwards ball cap guy who's in the playpen on the weekends. That guy has his own day. He's got a lot of days, but not this day. That's not for him.
Dude. I brought a case of White Claw for the chicks.
Sick, bro.
For the babes.
I like the lime one. Save me one.
I saw a couple of guys who fit that description at the grocery store this weekend scanning the White Claw trying to decide which flavors the babes like the most.
Yeah.
And I was going to assist them, but I thought, no, they got this. They got this.
Wait, now, what would you decide?
They were going with, like, raspberry, and then there was some new flavor that was very fruity, and grapefruit they said no to. And then they moved over to the raspberry, and they were sort of going through the flavors, but it was very female-oriented in their... They're buying.
Yeah,
right. That's the focus there. Right. That was very clear.
It's the new.
You think
roofie.
She'll like that?
Yeah, it is. It's basically a roofie in a can is what White Claw is now.
Because
That's what they're. They're now grapefruit. I would imagine. I mean, I don't know. Do you like the grapefruit?
I like the grapefruit. Yes,
Jen. Do you like grapefruit?
I do. I drink that Pamplemousse LaCroix all the time.
Yeah. All right. So maybe that's. Hey, maybe the guys. Guys like I don't like grapefruit. I don't think the babes will like it.
That was out.
Dude, bro, grapefruit. I saw Becca drinking one last weekend.
I saw Becca drinking everything last weekend.
And then they were trying to do the math, how many people there were and how many White Claws they would need.
Yeah.
And it was interesting math, I'll tell you.
What is
it was going to be quite a party.
When you see that in the store, I mean, this summer have I realized that that's a something.
Oh, the White Claw. It's huge.
Yeah, I mean,
I see a ton of guys drinking it too.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
What the? Come on now. Hey, we have some respect. Self-respect. What are you doing?
Do you say hand me a White Claw? Is that okay? Or
yeah.
Do you have to, kind of just go get it?
Hey, let's go pound claw.
Pound claw. Claws deep, bro. Claws no laws, bro.
Oh gosh.
Hey, long hair don't care, right? Right? You feel me, bro? Yeah. What's the alcohol percentage in that thing? In that bad boy?
They're not a lot. They're not a lot.
They're not?
I think they're in the fours.
Really? That's
oh, like
nice.
A like a light beer?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was more than that. I thought that was 5%. Yeah. So 5.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a beer. It's like a lighter.
Yeah, it's like a Budweiser.
Yeah, it's a beer.
So it's the millennial beer. Version of a Bartles and James.
Yeah.
Cooler.
Or a Zima.
They still have it.
And that's what it is. It's the modern Zima. But what it is just they're basically just taking the whole idea of the LaCroix, which everybody loves, right?
Uh-huh.
That's a hot thing now. All those sparkling waters that are flavored, lightly flavored, and they're just doing that. And they're throwing some alcohol on top of it. Now, next thing you know, now let me just tell you something. As a guy who, unfortunately, was in the Bartles and James era. And the Zima era of, sort of being, college and then right after college and that sort of thing. I got to say that, as a guy, you did try to like it. Because the girls, that's all they wanted with the Bartles and James. I don't really like beer.
They didn't like the beer. So
like
you tried
beer.
To get, the weren't there wine coolers too?
Yeah.
You tried to, yeah.
Well, that's what Bartles and James were.
That's
basically
what it was.
Wine coolers. Yeah. So you get the wine coolers and you're trying to like keep up with them, with the wine coolers. And you're like, oh God, this is awful. But it worked. I mean, it was like, because I think it was even higher in alcohol than the beer was. Because even back then, you had a crazy beer if you had like a Heineken at a 5.2, right? Or whatever that checks out at.
Right. Now the beer is
8.
Yeah, it's higher,
right?
Much higher.
All that stuff, all the IPAs, double IPAs, triple IPA.
Imperial stouts.
Yes, right. Exactly.
I think it's a good change of pace back. That's the way I refer to it. It's your change of pace back. Maybe you had one too many beers the night before and you got an early tea time and you're kind of, the thought of a beer kind of makes you gag a little bit.
So you're having a Zima?
Throwback.
A claw?
Throwback a claw.
Yeah. All right. I want to know something, Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Yeah.
You are a responsible male millennial on this show.
For the most part.
Mm-hmm. And you represent an entire generation of people who are trying to do the right thing and change the image. Do you have White Claw in your refrigerator? I want an honest answer.
I think there is, because I told you guys the roommate's girlfriend has basically moved in. So she's the one who got us kind of like, you should totally try it. She went all Becca on us. She's like, try the White Claws. And then we went, bro, we're like, dude, fine, I'll try one. But I rarely have them. I just, you know, I'm a beer man.
It doesn't sound like a bad idea, especially on the golf course, like you were saying. It seems like it would hydrate you.
It's a change of pace.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I said about Stella Artois, too. I'm having water right now.
It's the same. Yeah. Corona, same.
Right. Water. It's like,
exactly.
It's like 10 ounces as opposed to 12, and it's like it's fine.
But I don't like sugary or sweet drinks. Like,
is it
I can
sweet?
Never do. Not
no.
really. I think that's why people like, that's the appeal. It's not some like sugary. It's more of a LaCroix with booze.
Well, you named it. It does. It tastes a lot like you're just picking up one of those seltzer waters. And then.
And you don't taste it, right? Isn't that the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
You
yeah.
don't at all.
Right.
Becca, you drank all White Claws already? We've been here for 30 minutes.
Dude, where are the White Claws? Is Becca here?
Becca! Hey, Becca! So, dude, go get Becca. Who's the best swimmer?
Yeah, right. Pretty much.
Okay.
It's the White Claw appeal.
Coming up on the program, I got a family four-pack of tickets to go see the White Sox as they take on the Angels on Friday, September 6th. That's a week from Friday at 7:10 p.m. Listen every Monday for your chance to win four tickets to a White Sox game, right? As the season continues on here. About 4 weeks left in the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we got.
Good luck.
Weeks. All right. Let me do this. Let me tell you that Ben Bradley is going to be joining us in just a moment. Also coming up in the program, Ryan Burrow. Our own Ryan Burrow is doing a story about Midwest farmers. This is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Midwest farmers. There's a hotline now for stressed out farmers.
Yeah, I believe it with what's going on.
Because of what's going on. So we will talk a little bit about that. John Cass is going to be here. And that guy, that Joe Walsh guy, that clown is running for president.
He announced, and he was on the George Stephanopoulos over the weekend.
I know.
Did you see that?
People are taking him seriously. Like, he's a real guy.
Right.
He's a one-term congressman. You know how bad you got to be a one-term congressman? And he was just a talk show clown. I'm a talk show clown. I know a talk show clown.
You can
I recognize
identify
them.
These things. Yeah. You've worked with some over the years.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, it'd be like electing me president of the United States. Nobody needs that.
Besides the platform that he's running against, the reason why he's stepping in the race against Donald Trump, he's unfit, he's a child, he's reckless, he's erratic, he's a narcissist.
Okay.
Go ahead, okay, just have at it.
All right, but Joe, you see, that's how you started.
That's right.
I don't get it. It's like, well, I know him. Oh, okay. That's what we need. The guy who tweeted, Obama is a Muslim. Happy New Year.
That's right.
All right. I got it. Let's hold on. Ben Bradley is going to join us here in just a moment. But first, let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the newsroom?
Roe, it's going to cost you if you use tobacco products on the U of I Champaign campus. The details coming up.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Matera and Joe Donlin. Weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Ben Bradley's in the WGN TV newsroom. It's bustling back there. I saw you running around with a script in your hand and waving it a few minutes ago.
Very broadcast news.
Yeah. Yes, I find it's like carrying books. You just look smarter if you're carrying papers around. It looks more urgent. I sometimes ruffle them.
Plop them down on a desk very sort of, you know, strongly.
Exactly.
Damn it, we've got to get the facts on this!
Check that out.
Exactly.
Line 4.
And then if I start sweating hopelessly on the air, I can always use the papers to just, you know, kind of pat the sweat off.
Listen, kid, I'm going to tell you what my first editor told me. If your mother tells you she loves you, check it out.
I should have that put on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody says that and nobody checks anything out. All right.
They do over at WGN.
Oh, of course they do, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. What do we got going?
Well, you know, we are remembering a guy whose name most people might not know, but really an amazing figure in the aviation world. Captain Al Haynes was the controls. I know, Ro, you know who he is. Mm-hmm. July 1989, when a United Airlines DC-10 that was heading from the old Denver Stapleton Airport to Chicago O'Hare suffered catastrophic engine loss. What happened was a piece of a fan kind of broke free. There was shrapnel everywhere, and it damaged the main engine that sits on top of the tail of a DC-10. So Captain Hayes and two others in the cockpit guided that plane to the ground under incredibly difficult conditions. I spent the day kind of looking at some old interviews that Captain Haynes had done in recent years, and never wanted to be called a hero, never said he landed that plane. He always said it was a team. Yeah. But when you look at the video, which we are on CLTV right now, this is that remarkable video shot through a fence at the Sioux City Airport, showing that DC-10, coming down in what appeared to be a relatively controlled descent, and then it disappears behind some buildings and beneath the treetops and emerges in just a fireball and rolls down the runway. And when you look at the video, you would think no one survived that crash, but in fact, while 111 people died, 185 lived.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Some of them were in entire sections that were popped into a cornfield right off the runway.
Yep.
And literally, they landed. That thing rolled over and landed, feet down in the, and they just unbuckled themselves and walked out of the cornfield.
Mm-hmm. Captain Haynes woke up with the thought of, wait a minute, I was just in the air and now I'm on the ground and I have this pain in my back, and another member of the flight crew on top of him.
Gosh, think about that.
And Captain Haynes did something. That DC-10 had three engines, right? Mm-hmm. One on each wing and then one in the tail. And that's one of the issues that occurred there, was there was a malfunction and it blew the hydraulic system out. So in order to steer the plane, they didn't have the ability to use a rudder to steer. In order to steer the plane, they were using the engines. Mm-hmm. They were using the thrust of the engines left and right to steer left and steer right. And
they had never trained on that. It was not something on the checklist.
So he sat behind the throttle quadrant, and literally ran that while the other two pilots were controlling everything else that they could control at that point. Mm-hmm. And they got themselves in line by doing that. It took them close to an hour after the catastrophic failure of the aircraft to get themselves lined up at Sioux City, because that was the closest place with the longest runway for what they needed to do. And he put them using that, and also using the power to descend, because they didn't have they had very little surface control on that aircraft.
When you lose hydraulics, you lose almost every aspect of controlling an airplane.
Right. So on the wings and in the tail section, all that stuff that you need to turn the plane and bank the plane, all that stuff, all gone. So they get down, and they're right there, and it was a very unfortunate gust of wind, speed of approach, and all that created that bounce and then that roll that we saw. But it is an amazing story, and he went on to be the chief pilot at United, didn't he?
He not only continued to fly after that accident, but, yeah, traveled the world preaching safety and really was never shy about talking about what happened, talking about how he feels, communication, preparation, all these things that go into an incident are the keys to coming out of an incident. And I talked with Tom Eilers, who's a guy from Winnetka who I previously interviewed, who was on that flight. So imagine you're among the 185 people who survived that crash back in 1989. Every day of your life since is a blessing.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
And so I reached out to Mr. Eilers about the passing of Captain Haynes, and he said, those of us who walked away that day owe a great debt to the man who not only preserved our lives, but set an example of selfless service.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing. You get chills just thinking about that. Mm-hmm. Those people were given a chance.
Yeah.
Because of him.
And when people survive potentially horrific and catastrophic plane crashes, it's generally because the guy in the cockpit or the woman in the cockpit is the one who you want there, right? Like, think about it. You had Sully for the Miracle on the Hudson.
Right.
These are people who, so much of flying today is automated.
And
yeah, and that's my point.
Yeah.
Is these people are experts because they know how to react and can react in a calm and cool fashion.
Also, because the major airlines in the United States are required because of the FAA and because of the union rules and because of the corporate commitment to this, to have redundant training in ways that are that make American aviation the safest in the world,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there's you hear about plane crashes in other parts of the world, and in most cases it's either mechanical or which is a maintenance issue, maintenance or pilot error. It's human error in some way, shape, or form. And you know, save the whole 737 MAX thing. That's a, put that in a separate category.
But some of the criticism on the 737 MAX crashes have been pilots in the cockpit
not properly trained.
Who didn't have the proper training.
Right, and so that's and you know, luckily that did not happen here domestically. But it is these guys are amazing. Al Haynes is a guy that you know I think in the pilot community, you know that I think there's a lot of people who. Most of the people who are sitting in that left seat on any airline flight you're going to take today or tomorrow or a year from now, whatever it is, those people could probably do the exact same thing mm-hmm. that Al Haynes did and that Sully did and all the rest of them did.
And it's important for us to think about it, especially as air travel has become so commonplace in such a catcall, right? Like everyone wants to be pissed when the plane is 12 minutes late or they don't have your snack.
Yeah,
but this is still a miracle that we are getting in the air and getting down safely.
Yeah, and you know, tens of thousands.
Get your scoop waffle.
Yeah, I mean, look at the. I love that Flight Radar 24.
Yes,
you can see all the planes in the air at any given moment. I mean, just amazed. You know, like anybody's afraid of flying, just go look at that and realize every one of those landed safely today and yesterday and the day before that. You know, it just it's a pretty amazing thing. All right, Ben, thank you very much. That's a great story. That's tonight at what time?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Yep.
All right. And WGN TV News.
All see you then.
Let us now check in with Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN Radio News brought to you by AppleChevy.com. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up, John Katz going to join us, talk about the one-term congressman from the Chicago area who's going to run for president.
He's announced.
Yeah,
he was out there out front in all the morning shows on Sunday.
Yeah. And then there's a story about a party, a Bill Clinton party that went a little bad.
It did.
In the Hamptons.
It really did. Sometimes, you know, he just, there was some things about the party he didn't like and he made it known to everybody there.
Yes, there was DJ, loud music, and Bill Clinton. And we could just imagine how that's going to go. That's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour as well. All right. Right now, Ryan Burrow is joining us in the studio. And Ryan's been working for ABC News this week, this weekend, about this story, about this new hotline that is now available for farmers who are stressed out.
Yeah,
by the climate and the economy, right? Because the climate and it's the I would actually say the weather here as opposed to the climate for the moment, because this weather this year has been particularly terrible.
Horrible.
In the Midwest,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
In terms of getting the crops
flooding
in
and getting the corn planted, absolutely.
Yep, and then China on top of it.
China.
So explain that.
Well, this is the Farm and Rural Stress Hotline. And let's take a step back here. This has been an industry that is physically trying. It's emotionally trying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that finally the mental health professionals are starting to get in there and realize, you know, we've got a problem and we've got to be able to reach out and talk directly to a community. So Avera Behavioral Health has established this Farm and Rural Stress Hotline. And they've staffed it up 24/7 to help farmers out dealing with mental struggles, financial struggles, and trying to help them work through these things. We've always talked about this, and you may have talked with Orion about this before, about suicide rates among farmers are really, really high.
Is there sort of a trend line that shows that it's getting higher over the years?
You know, we're just starting to get the numbers now, so a lot of these numbers, maybe it's been on par or on pace, but now we're starting to acknowledge and understand these numbers a little bit more. Let's flash back to 2016. The numbers initially came out. It said that farmers committed suicide or took their own lives at three times the pace of the average citizen
American.
In America. They came and actually backed down on that a little bit because they said that they had grouped too many people into this one industry. They weren't kind of separating them out.
Okay.
So
the agriculture industry versus farmer.
They had like
itself.
Forestry in there and everything like that. So they've changed that up a little bit. It's not in the top three right now, but it's still, I mean, we're talking about 17 out of every 100,000 are dying. So they see an opportunity there to reach out. And, you know, it's interesting talking to the agency that's doing this, Avera Behavioral Health, and they say that, you know, 50% of the phone calls that they've started receiving aren't from the farmers themselves. They're from family members.
So kind of reporting, hey, something's wrong here. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you think about, like as Ro pointed out, the record rainfall in May that made it late to put the seed in the ground and delayed it dramatically in a lot of cases, and then the yields have been down. There was the federal bailout, which seemed okay, like helpful, but then you look at the trade war and how that's just another hit.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's not just China. Remember, if you go back, I believe it was last year with the milk wars we were having with Canada. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there are a lot of things in that industry that are out of control, out of the control of the people who are actually growing.
Sure. Right? Well, that's what farming is.
Yeah.
Right? That's what makes farming so... It has always been stressful. It has always been, and we in the Midwest, I think, have a little bit different appreciation than maybe the coastal communities of America have about what it really takes. This isn't a given that there's going to be a breadbasket, right? I mean, you know that in the 1930s, right, what happened in Oklahoma, right, with the Dust Bowl and the great droughts there and all of that. So this is, even though a lot of it's mechanized, it's corporate, it's all that. And, you know, there's better, more durable seeds and product now. It's just not, it's still hard. You still got to get the seeds in the ground. You still got to get the crop out. You got to get the crop to market. You got to get all those things worked. And it is, and you know, I think, you know, here, especially since the Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange and everything, you know, been here for so long, it's such an important part of the culture here. We definitely need to be respectful of what it takes to be able to do that. And, you know, Farm Aid, right? Mm-hmm. That's 40 years ago that all of that stuff really started. And so this is a new era in the, you know, that this kind of commerce, but we can't afford to play around with emerging markets like China in this. I get that we have to, China's complicated, but the problem is that Brazil is a gigantic soybean manufacturer. And it'll be just as easy for those contracts to change because they still got to go across the Pacific Ocean to get to Asia.
Sure.
Yeah.
You had that study that was Crain's had an excellent article breaking down too how the Fed had surveyed the banks that service agricultural communities and farmers mostly and said that they are having a record high in the number of people who are either close to defaulting on their loans or having extreme difficulty paying those loans. So it's showing an extreme financial pressure in that community when you see that type of reporting, those kinds of numbers.
And an industry perhaps that's not as willing to be forthright about the emotions and mental anguish they're dealing with.
I mean, this is strong people.
Don't go to the farm next to you and say, hey, you know, I'm having a real hard time with this. You know, I mean, it's you just kind of do your business and get to the grind and deal with this on your own. So,
yeah.
It's interesting stuff. And in terms of the other piece there, too, you hear this consistently from farmers when they're interviewed about international trade and tariffs and things like that. They tend to be very free market, right, obviously. Mm-hmm. But they also don't like the idea of the handout. There's a pride in you know, doing this. Obviously, farming subsidies have been a reality for a long time, for over a generation. But this type of, hey, don't worry about it. I'm going to pick you up on this because, you know, we're going to take the money off of the tariffs. Well, again, that's not how that works. The tariffs are that gets paid to the U.S. government, not in the dollars that the president says, by Americans who are paying the added tax, the excise tax, on the actual product that they're buying. You know, so it's like, it is not, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. And farmers, I think, also understand exactly, you know, how and when they're trying to sell going the other way, and then they're going to get jammed up.
Sure.
And they're going to get, you know, there's going to be preference over some South American product or other Asian product that you know may be able to be grown. It's just it's a really 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 tough lot that everybody finds themselves in, and I think there needs to be more attention paid. And you know, you thank guys like John Mellencamp and Willie Nelson and guys like that who, you know, in the entertainment industry that paid so much attention to this.
Absolutely.
But that's been almost forgotten.
Yeah. Maybe they need another bout of that. Don't you think they should, yeah, it'd be the right time to get
going
something to like
Farm
that together?
Gonna head up there?
I guess.
Right, they're doing it's Alpine this year, right? They're bringing it back?
Are they?
Yeah. Dave Matthews Band. This. John Mellencamp?
I refuse to see the Dave Matthews Band.
No.
after what they did.
After he fouled the Chicago River. Actually, the tour boat on the Chicago River.
I'll have to raise the money for farmers.
Yeah, okay. Right. Well, then we'll do that. All right.
September 21st.
Watch out where the porta potties are. Yeah.
You're right. September 21st, East Troy, Wisconsin.
Yeah, there you go. At Alpine, over by Alpine. All right.
All right.
I'm in.
Neil Young.
Thank you.
Bonnie Raitt.
Wow.
Tanya Tucker.
That's quite. It's quite a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's get them in for Live Music Friday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Get Mellencamp in here for Live Music Friday. He's so easy to go along with. It shouldn't be a problem.
Well, he's got to pass through here on the way to Wisconsin, so he should stop by.
Does he manage to get through Illinois from Indiana? Or does he just kind of helicopter over? I don't know.
I saw his house in Seymour last year. It, you know, when he goes, you know, he's just a humble farmer.
No, that doesn't fit.
No. They got the best Starbucks I've ever seen in Seymour, Indiana. That's all I want to say.
All right.
Howard Kramer figured it out. Or Howard, not Kramer. Howard Schultz figured it out.
Okay.
I'm going to put that guy alone between he and his managers and roadies and everybody else. They're going to keep that Starbucks in Seymour populated forever.
Good for them.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Roe, the White House is clarifying the First Lady's relationship with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. We'll explain coming up.
Pumpkin spice latte comes back tomorrow.
Oh, God.
Sorry to let you know that.
Oh,
I know it's not a favorite of yours, and it's just sort of a sign of, you know, that time of the year.
Yeah.
But this year they're going to have the some kind of a cold brew, pumpkin cold brew. So,
I bought pumpkin yogurt today.
See, it's everywhere.
Yeah, pumpkin spice Cheerios I saw too.
Here we go. It's pumpkin spice season.
All sorts of Halloween decorations at the store last night.
No way.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, pumpkin things and pumpkin stuff.
I will not do this. I will not give in. I know that we have 7 days left of summer, but I will not give in.
Be strong, okay? Row strong.
Of the summer season, we should say. 7 days left of the summer season. And I'm going to pretend that none of this ever happened.
You're not participating in the pumpkin spice latte.
No,
I
will not.
I'm not either.
I don't even, I mean, the pumpkin, like as a kid, right, when you're doing pumpkin seeds and stuff.
That's
like,
fun.
You know, you're goring out a pumpkin and then.
That's fun. That's in October, though.
Yes, that's true. But every once in a while, you're doing it. And then, you know, as a kid, you stick everything in your mouth. You stick the pumpkin guts in your mouth. And you're like, this really sucks. And then somehow, some way, they made the, you know, they've declared that the pumpkin is actually the spice flavor or the flavor profile. It is not. It is the cinnamon. It is all the stuff that goes into a pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin has no flavor, really.
Right. Pumpkin pie is great, but it's all the stuff that they put into the pumpkin pie. It's the sugar, the cinnamon,
right.
The, you know, whatever, the nutmeg. Is it nutmeg?
Turns out I like that, but all when it's all mixed together and all those spices.
The cardamom.
I never use that, but that's in there too. It tastes good.
The cumin, the cucumber, all the things that you put in there. I make a very 21st century. I'm like one of those hipster chefs in Logan Square. I make a deconstructed pumpkin pie that has no pumpkin in it.
Oh.
Yeah. It's actually a cucumber, but I call it pumpkin pie. And it's got cumin and cardamom in it.
And all the foodies go nuts.
And Cointreau. And I don't even know what that is.
It's like a pumpkin pie. It's called a pumpkin pie, but there's no pumpkin in it.
Right. Because we don't want to kill the pumpkins. We're afraid we don't believe in any sort of violence against a pumpkin. I got to tell you though, I like consumerism, big fan.
It's good for the economy.
I work in commercial radio, so I love it.
Right.
I love it in a way that I love it in an all-encompassing kind of way. However, I think that when we get too ahead of ourselves in terms of our seasons,
mm-hmm.
and we do, because we're always looking for an edge. So we got to come. Everybody has to have a peg to sell something. You do not have. Should not have a peg for Halloween in the last week of August.
Halloween's big business, though. So you want to. You can't get started early enough. I think if you're a retailer,
it's 2 months away. I mean, first of all, the candy's not going to hold.
No,
right?
No, that's true.
And the, I mean, I guess those things don't ever, do the little Mounds bars go bad? I don't, they probably don't.
Candy right? corn's probably not.
No. See it again, the candy corn, the worst.
I know. I don't really like those, but when you're a kid, you love them.
Oh my God, the pumpkin spice, anything.
Tomorrow. Till tomorrow. Still got a little time to prepare.
I wanted to, before we leave the CLTV show, I just want to get Kevin's quick thoughts on the Andrew Luck story. Here's a guy who's 29 years old. He's had a spate of injuries. He's been in the league 7 years, including a concussion and some concerns after that. And he's enduring criticism like he's some sort of traitor.
It's pretty ridiculous. I mean, considering what he's done and what he's been doing for that organization. Top overall pick. I understand fans being frustrated, but I mean, this is a guy who has battled. He missed an entire season with a shoulder injury. And for him to be booed off like that, I thought was kind of ridiculous.
What?
Are you calling an 800 number over there?
I got stuck. I got into a car accident today, and I got stuck with this insurance thing. I apologize.
Oh.
I apologize. I had to deal with that really quick during the...
Is she still there? Wait, hold on. Are you on hold?
Are
you on hold?
I'm on hold.
But
right,
it takes forever.
On hold. Go ahead. Let's do this. We'll get to Andrew Luck later. We got to get to your insurance
problem. I'm sorry. It was my first car accident ever.
Are you okay?
Is it bad?
No, it's not bad at all, but now they got to deal with all this nonsense.
Just a fender bender, hopefully?
Just a fender bender. Embarrassing today.
In the Patriot?
In the Patriot.
The whitest car in America.
My car completely fine. I just happened to hit one of these little cars that everybody drives because they're gas efficient. If I hit another Patriot, it would have been nothing.
You didn't hit anything, Kevin. You hit nothing.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Hey.
It hit you.
Jen and I will handle this for you right now, Kevin. You
stop
don't understand.
Talking.
You didn't hit nothing. They hit you with the side of their car.
Exactly.
That's what they did.
Improper lane usage.
Right. Guys slid into you
no
into
signal.
The front of your car from sliding into sight. That's exactly what
happened. All right. We're going with that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't looking. Probably on his cell phone.
Right.
I was not on my phone.
Not you.
I mean,
the other driver.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You were at 10-2 at the time,
mm-hmm.
reciting the rules of the road to yourself while you were driving. The radio wasn't even on.
Oh my God! Sorry about that.
All right. Well, why don't you go handle that?
I think it's done now. She hung up, so hopefully everything's
poor
done.
Poor Kev. No, he's gonna go call back
still,
and be on hold.
Was that a human really talking to you, or were you just on hold?
No, I was talking to a human, and I called earlier, and then I was on hold, and then when she got to me, we were back on the air, and I was trying to.
Oh.
This is a nightmare.
She
was just so worst. But I think we got everything under. Under
all right, you call her back. You want me to call her back?
No, it's okay. I do have an incoming call. I wonder who that is.
Just go grab that. Just grab.
All right. The news with Kim Gordon comes right from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and that's 2 minutes away. Concho with Anna DeVlantes.
Mm-hmm.
Right here on 720 WGN. It's in Chicago.
It is. Yes.
In case you're wondering. Also in Chicago is John Cass. He's with the Chicago Tribune. And he is he's one of those columnists that, you know, he's a must read. That's what they call guys like that. A must read. And I bring you in, John, because I got a question for you. You've been around this town a long time. Anna and I have been around this town a long time. This Joe Walsh is not the guy from the Eagles. This Joe Walsh was a guy who was a congressman who was a talk show host who became a congressman who became a talk show host again, I think, right? Didn't he? After his little foray into it, he was always a bomb thrower. He was a guy that was always saying crap that, you know, the sort of stuff that Trump said that people are like, oh my God, no one could ever get elected doing that. And he got elected for one term as a congressman. And now he wants to run for president of the United States. after doing exactly, saying exactly the same sort of stuff, being a clown, like you know, the president does, but without the portfolio the president brought to the job. And what is he doing?
I don't think President Trump ever said that it would be a good thing to arm first graders with mortars so that they could become proficient grenadiers, like he did to Sacha Baron Cohen, like Walsh did.
Yeah.
You know, that video's going around again.
Right.
It's just it's ridiculous. But I guess it proves, once again, you put a camera in front of a politician or a print journalist, distinguished print journalist, and they have to do stupid stuff, right, Anna? Don't they do stupid stuff?
To get attention, sure.
Ro, yeah. you put that microphone in front of me, and if Jeff Carlin wasn't sitting on my, you know, pushing my shoulders down, I might say stupid stuff.
Your producer.
Yeah.
And our producer.
You know,
your producer.
That's right.
The funny thing that happens is that people decide if they're going to get attention, they're going to say outrageous things. This has been the Atlantic magazine had this story about talk radio kind of creating this whole problem in the first place, right? And the guys who really cut through in talk radio in the 1980s into the 1990s were people who were just willing to say outrageous things. Now, again, it could have been a guy doing politics like Rush, or a guy doing, you know, more, you know, sort of lifestyle things like Howard, right? But it was just
like a nerdy, weird-looking guy with hot chicks in the studio.
Yeah, talking about his own junk. So the thing is that gets everybody's attention, right? And so that was just about getting attention. And somehow that became the currency of politics in America. What, especially because Limbaugh is particularly great at articulating a position, and you listen to it and you go, my God, I think I might agree with that. And then you stop and you think, wait, that wouldn't actually work as policy, but it sounds good, right? And so then,
well, like most people, if you agree with something a conservative says, you only have to do it. You can't say, like, I really agree with what John Cass says. You have to kind of hide it and whisper it, you know, in a corner, in cells of three.
You will admit that there have been a lot of conservative policies. Well, the same can be said of liberal policies that are populist policies. But let's just stick with the conservatives for a moment, because that's what we're dealing with, the president and with this guy. Okay, just for the moment.
Right.
There are a lot of things that made absolutely no sense, but sounded like they were a good idea or were built to salve a fear that people have, right? And that's the thing. Listen, Joe Walsh.
You're giving him too much credit. The guy just wants attention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I believe
this guy said, the N-word on the radio. I never listened to him after that. I just have nothing. A gentleman would stand up and walk out of the room without comment.
Well, like look at his
Conwood.
Look at his
Roe
Twitter
Conwood
history.
Just stand up.
Look at his Twitter history, which he's now saying, "Okay, I apologize for everything." But you kind of think if there's one or two things you have to apologize for, it's one thing. If you have to apologize for your entire body of work, that's another thing. He called the Sandy Hook parents. He's sick and tired of them. They're just partisan people. I mean, talk about a lack of empathy. He's used the N-word multiple times. He's said Obama's a Muslim. He's used all kinds of ethnic slurs. I mean, you just look at all of it, and it tells you who he is. And then he has the nerve to say, I'm running against President Trump to make the moral case against him. That's right. What he's doing.
But you know what interests me is that people are so deranged over Trump that journalists, professional, responsible journalists, are actually sticking a microphone in this guy's face and asking him what he thinks about stuff.
Excellent point.
And that is just...
Well,
I mean, like Lynn Swift, I mean, the Sun-Times, the Tribune, all of us, we've done like stories on Joe Walsh. Like, really? He's real.
That's the problem. I just looked over.
He's everywhere. He's absolutely everywhere.
John Cass, I just turned to my left. I got a TV on with a bunch of cable news stuff on it. And there he was, sitting right there with CNN, right? And an anchor.
Brian Stelzer.
Right. Well, an anchor's. And no, this was just now. This was just in the last half hour. He was sitting live on CNN. And I'm like, what the hell are they doing? This guy is a clown. He has no. It would be like. I'm going to just tell you right now. I'd rather have Barron Trump as president of the United States if he qualified than Joe Walsh.
But don't you think. Do you think it's an example of them trying to, some people trying to put forth this idea that the conservative wing of the party is now turning against Trump, and they are doing it, and you see Joe Walsh talking about these things, about deficits, about free trade, limited government, those kinds of issues that finally they're all kind of giving up on Trump from the right.
Well, I guess you could stand at any bus stop and listen to a madman babble on and on for hours about things that he heard out of the electric socket in his sister-in-law's house.
Mm-hmm.
And you could quote that too. But that really doesn't. I mean, look, this guy's going to be raising money off this, right? And who knows? He'll raise a lot of money because Bill Kristol and other people, just anything that's anti-Trump must be good. And therefore, he'll raise money. Maybe he can buy stuffed elk heads and, like Jesse Jackson Jr.
And
maybe he could but pay taxes. I would say, Joe, Mr. Walsh, please pay taxes on what you your campaign funds.
Well, there are a lot of rules about that now. As he will learn if he hasn't already, that it's not, you can't. There was a day where you could take that money and convert it if you paid the taxes. Now it's not that simple. And
really?
Yeah. And so,
damn it.
Yeah. So it is very, but he could become a power broker though. If he raises enough money, then he could power broker himself into another candidate, helping another candidate.
Or he could just make some money and try to improve a radio show that I don't know who listens to. It's really unlistenable.
Is he still on the radio? I'm not even aware of that.
I have no idea.
They called him a radio show host on Stephanopoulos yesterday.
One-term congressman. Do you know how hard it is to be a one-term congressman? John.
There's other issues. When the Tea Party began and people were upset over things like the deficit, which they're not anymore,
right?
And health care, there were legitimate citizens who were upset over what was going on, and they just got sick of it, and they stood up. And then came the hustlers and the herders, people like this and others from Congress, who came in, and they were going to organize them and help them, really, they were going to get in front of this movement. And they just basically, look, if they don't have thoughts in their head, they don't have thoughts in their head. You have to read the books. You have to think clearly. You have to have an argument, maybe more than one. How about you can have three arguments in your head at one time?
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's tough.
But you know what? Back to the issue that I want to talk about, Ro, which is you media people put a – notice I'm accepting myself.
Yes,
you put a microphone – Anna, during your TV days, she – put a microphone, camera go on, the light goes on, and what do they do? Or you with you guys with your microphone now and WGN radio thing, you put a microphone on and people say anything they want to be on, they want to be known.
Yeah, right. I think it's important to put in context, though, to explain all of the things, the wacky things he's done over his career and the offensive things he's said as well.
He's a moron, okay?
All right, okay. You're going to call him a moron. I'm just going to call him a clown. He's all of it. And I cannot believe...
He's a bleeping clown.
Now, let me tell you something. Let me explain why... Why, if you watch Chicago media and listen to Chicago media, save one or two shows, you're not going to hear much on Chicago media from him because everybody knows he's a clown here. The fact that the guy popped up and he's in Washington and he's sitting around and, everybody's TV studios, Washington, New York, wherever he went to get on all these shows, that is a different deal. That's like, and everybody's like, oh, look, new meat. Oh, well, he's going to fight Trump. He's, my God. It's like trying to get Frank Nitti to go fight Al Capone. It's sort of like, what are you doing?
You've got Clinton donor zero, George Stephanopoulos, you know, on his show, which I don't watch because of that. And then, you know, maybe he's got, isn't he on Chris Matthews too?
He's on maybe CNN, Chris. MSNBC. He's doing all the rounds today and some yesterday too.
Sending tingles up and down Chris Matthews' leg, right?
I don't know. I think when people figure this out, one would assume that they. Okay, I got to be careful what I say here, because I was going to assume that that people would be smarter than this in mass. But this is early in the season; people aren't really totally tuning into what's happening. It's just when you go back
this week.
Well, right, and you go back and you stop and you think what this guy has done of all the people. Of all the people to run as the sane alternative for Republicans, this is not the guy, right? I mean, that's where one wonders why a Mitt Romney or somebody else maybe not him because he's lost, but there are plenty of Republicans of great gravity and integrity and experience and thoughtfulness that could step up and go, you know,
sure.
What? And but if you notice, it's every jag who wants to go do it. You got this guy, this clown, and then you got that Mark Sanford guy,
right
from South Carolina, who gave the worst, and you know, maybe he was an okay governor, I don't know, but he gave the worst excuse for where he was when he was having an affair.
It was love, Ro. It was all about love.
Okay. I was in love.
That one.
Yeah.
You know what, though? It does tell you how desperate, I have to say, we in the media are. The media is so desperate to A, get ratings, and B, find an alternative to Trump. They're tired. The Gang of Four or Squad or whatever, that's backfiring. Joe Biden doesn't know where he is half the time. Yeah, am I in Vermont? Yes, I'm in New Hampshire, or whatever he said. He can't even remember what when he was vice president. And the kids from the school in Florida came to visit him. All that stuff is happening, so they're desperate to look anything they can find. It's really pathetic.
Yeah.
I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Joe Walsh.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah. Okay. All right, John, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Thanks. Hung up on him. Tell him we love him, too.
We love you back.
Yeah, get him back. Just tell him we love him. Tell him we had to hang up the phone because Kevin's got to call his insurance agent.
Yeah, we got to keep the phone lines open in case they call. You know how hard it is to get everybody. Well, he's right about the inordinate amount of attention Joe Walsh got. If you turned on a TV today, a national television show, like over the weekend or today a cable newser, you would see Joe Walsh. And you're still seeing him. You're talking about it now as we've been on the air.
Yeah.
Throughout the day.
It's... Absolutely. I mean, the thing is that they just have they not done the research? Have they not figured out what this guy has said and done?
You'd hope so.
In his public career? I mean,
he's not shy about it, right? It's not like you got to dig too far.
And it's not like he was a guy that, you know, came out of some sort of legitimate thing, right? And then became, and then it was like, I mean, at least, as much as I think that, Trump is, this is not going to end well for him or America or anything, if it's unless somebody gets their arms around him and soon, but and says, hey, maybe we got to start rethinking some of the things that you're doing. But I don't think he would listen to anybody. Mm-hmm. But Joe Walsh comes from nothing. Like he's got, this is not a guy that he's just a guy who wanted to be famous, who wanted to be something. He wanted to be out in the public eye. So he said obnoxious things because he figured that's the fastest way. And it really is in a lot of ways, the fastest way to get attention.
Can be.
And people who are paranoiacs and haters are always looking for other paranoiacs and haters. They do not like being alone. And so that's kind of an easy group to aggregate. I can just tell you that's, I've been in this business for over three decades.
Right.
I know how that works. And I made choices in my career to avoid that, mm-hmm. as opposed to give into it. Well, I was told to give into it,
right?
Because I wouldn't do it, because I just think it wasn't me and it wasn't responsible. And there are people who just, you know, you spend 5 minutes with some of these guys who created that form of radio, the producers and the salespeople and all that, who figured out, the executive types who figured out that brand of talk radio. They can train you in 30 minutes to be a talk show host if you wanted to be. And you'd get, and you know, and in some ways, you'd get some, but the guy's got, he's got nothing.
Don't get it right, just get it on.
Get it right. No, intentionally get it wrong. But now we're running government like that. And next thing you know, Melania Trump is kissing Kim Jong-un. They never met!
I don't know how to make sense of that.
Don't get me started! All right, Kim, what's coming up in the news?
Well, we're following the dangerous situation along the city's lakefront. It's another day of rough surf.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. All right, Kevin, how's your insurance situation?
I asked him about it in the hallway. We're very concerned.
I wrapped up with the insurance agent and everything, so.
All right.
We'll see where it goes.
A little fender bender today.
Never been in a car accident before.
Well, I've been in one before, but never me driving. So this is the first one with me behind the wheel.
Okay.
It was a traumatic moment for me.
There's nothing worse than the sound of the crunch of that metal or whatever it is, fiberglass.
You're definitely not yourself today.
I I feel off. When it happened, you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? Because I was at the Kennedy, which was a parking lot. Yeah. We weren't even moving. I'm like, how did that just happen?
Okay. It's going to be okay. And remember, it was somebody else's fault. Remember what Jen DeSalvo said.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's fault. Don't you worry about nothing. Don't worry about the law firm of Conn and DeVlantis, neither of whom are attorneys.
No, don't worry about that, though.
Right. You
doesn't
got nothing
matter.
To worry about. But the nice thing is we know some judges. So that's good enough. That's how we do. So we got, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
It'll be good.
You know. I don't think this is going to go to court.
I don't think
I really don't think so.
I got a neck brace for you, though.
Wear that everywhere.
Shoulder does feel a little off.
Do a lot of postings on social media in your neck brace, okay? That's the advice we're giving you.
Right. As a matter of fact, right now I'm going to go slam your head into the sink in the bathroom. and then put the neck brace on and go, hey, this bruise just appeared. I don't know. I couldn't see it when it happened. That is the way it goes here.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I've never dealt with this before.
Did the other person claim an injury?
No injury or anything.
Right, okay, good. All right,
you're fine. Just had to get on the record and everything.
Yeah, all right, it's fine. To take pictures and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Couple coppers stop by.
I like when people have like a little fender bender and then they keep their car in the middle of the intersection.
My God, I know.
Because if I move it, the insurance won't pay. Yes, they will. Just take a picture. Take a picture of each other's driver's license and insurance card and get the hell out.
That's pretty much what happened. Pretty much, and I'm not kidding. Maybe a mile before it happened, there was three cars dealing with what appeared to be just a little minor fender bender. I go, God, that would suck today, especially in the rain. They're all standing out there in the rain. Next time I blinked.
You willed it on yourself.
Copper showed up. Yeah, I saw one of these about a mile back. I go, so did I. Son of a... Any injuries? I go, no, officer, I think we'll be all right.
Was the other person pretty calm? Or
Yeah. Okay.
That's good. That seems like, you know.
I carry a neck brace in my trunk just in case.
Neck brace?
Just put it right on, yeah. In case there's a fender bender and I just go, I get out in the neck brace. I go, look, I already got injured.
Ow.
Well, he did get out of the car and say, well, what happened? I go, it's pretty self-explanatory. Look at the cars. What do you mean, what happened?
All right. And you did not strike the other vehicle.
I did not strike.
You did not. Remember that. You did not strike the other vehicle. The other vehicle backed into you in traffic.
I've never been through this before, so I'm just like worried because I don't know. I'm just like expecting the worst to happen, whatever could possibly happen.
What's the worst that could happen?
I don't know. I've never
experienced
this.
You're going to jail? What's
going
to happen?
I had a good run, Ro. Can you put a call in for me to someone? What are your
We're going to get Mike Monaco on to defend him in a traffic case.
Yeah, we will.
It's a little overkill, I think, no, given the situation.
Mike Monaco for the defense, Your Honor. Well, defense?
Mike Monaco?
He's here to pay. He's here to pay. You didn't even get a ticket, did you?
No.
For God's sake. Everybody's fine. What is the other vehicle in this?
Like, you want brand and everything?
Yeah. What kind of vehicle?
It was a Toyota Prius.
Oh, God, not a Prius.
I know. If it was any other car.
Wait, what's wrong with the Prius? I don't understand, but they're small.
But the Prius drivers, you know, they're very particular.
That's what I'm going to do. That's a different situation. These are the people that, you know, get fussy about things.
Yeah, very fussy.
Huh. Like, you're not going to want to drive around with
it. Hit me. Have you heard about our eco problem, our environment problem as well?
Yeah, did you get a little tongue lashing, a little talking to over the environment?
He might have been eating an Impossible Burger when we were driving here. That may have distracted him while he was operating his eco vehicle.
Is that what you told the officer?
Right. That is a suffer-free burger that he's having.
And that could have been a distraction.
That's right, Your Honor. Mike Monaco for the defense comes in and, you know, in his suit with
he's
a scarf.
He's got a team of people
with a pocket square. All the people that walked in that were with the Michael Cohen team are on the Kevin Powell team for the fender bender.
I like it.
He's got three former judges on the case. Briefs. When they had to bring the cart, that metal cart that's got all the files on it, they're bringing that in.
We should just make a bid out of it and do it.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone's got to pay. Anyway, all right, so listen to this. It takes a fearless DJ to stand up for late night vibes when you got Bill Clinton asking to turn the music down, according to Page Six, New York Post. But that's what happened in the Hamptons when Bill and Hillary, John Bon Jovi, and John Corzine, there's a Corzine. The Corzine, right? Corzine is the way they
Corzine
pronounce that in New Jersey.
Right. Yeah, he used to be the governor.
Dined at an East Hampton hotel. The Maidstone.
Sounds swanky.
Yeah, it does. Sure. Okay, so according to a witness, Bill asked the staff to turn down the music as the late night music scene was just beginning because they were still having dinner and they were having a deep political discussion. I could just imagine. So why'd she lose? She lost to a clown, you know. To an absolute... The only person in America that could lose to Donald Trump as president of the United States.
Did he start out by saying, now what had happened was...
So then they were told no by the DJ.
Because he said turn it down. He's like, no, I'm supposed to be playing.
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you something right now. I'm getting paid. I'm getting paid $50 to be here, and I'm gonna play my music.
I bet in the Hamptons he gets paid a little more than that. It's a big gig.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
$60.
Clinton's table, which included D.C. lobbyist Liz Robbins, had enjoyed. my guess is Liz Robbins gave them this tip. That's why she gets named in it. Had enjoyed dinner at the restaurant with a menu curated by Cafe Clover chef David Stanbridge. Maybe he called it in. Everybody else that gets named in here.
You always wonder.
To do with, yeah. And then you're like, why?
What does it?
Yeah. Their table was there till 11 o'clock. The hotel celebrating its 10th anniversary. I guess the hotel called it in now. Everyone's a suspect here. This is like
a clue
as to who gave the tip to the New York Post.
He arrived with John Bon Jovi, which I thought was really cool.
Hey, John Bon Jovi, would you sign my bottle of Jack Daniels for me? I remember seeing it for the first time on the Eastern Shore, and I was drinking Jack Daniels that night, too. I'm just a little nervous. Yeah, this one's for you, JBJ. And your grandpa is sitting with you, too. Got some John Bon Jovi for you. Hey, former New Jersey Governor Corzine. Good to see you.
Well done. So he's trying to talk and get all political and have a political conversation, and the DJ's playing too loud.
Yeah.
Too loudly. So he tells him, shut it down. Turn the music down. And then, I just can't, I mean, I think it's it's pretty strong for the DJ to turn around and say, no, I'm not doing it. Because he asked personally. He didn't send somebody over to ask the DJ. He asked personally. Hey, turn it down.
We're over here at the table having a conversation about important stuff. I'm an important guy. I was president of the United States. You may not remember me. But
Can't hear you.
I'm over there with former Governor Corzine. and my wife. And what we need here is for you to turn this down right now, because we cannot do it. The sort of not bear. No, that's not down. That's up. See, I need to turn this down because we're having a conversation here, and we got it. It's very important. Uh-oh.
DJ wouldn't do it. Just wouldn't do it.
All right, so then he just wouldn't do it, right? And then there is now, and he's like, and is Bill Clinton trying to shout over the thing?
He doesn't talk very loudly. Remember when we heard him on the campaign trail, and it seems like they have to really crank up his microphone because he has that he doesn't have a very loud voice anymore for whatever reason. Don't you agree that you think?
Oh yeah, no.
A,
I mean, ever since
he
never really had a loud
Maybe
voice.
Maybe he didn't.
But you know, ever since the Hardy Poo issue, you know, they had the little, you know, thing. So the DJ cranks this up then. Oh, wait a second. That was my theme to my election 1992. All right, I'm okay. They'll put me back. Hillary, remember when you could win an election?
Oh, he did not say that.
My guess is he did.
Oh, turn the music back up. I don't want Hillary to yell at me. Yesterday's gone.
Yesterday's gone. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. You are the only person who could lose to that guy. Only one. I told you shouldn't run. I can't hear anything anymore. Hey, JBJ, want to go out and smoke a bone? Just think what tomorrow will do. Don't stop thinking. All right. I just don't get it.
I don't. If you're at a swanky party like that, though, and the DJ starts playing, I don't know if you can go over and tell him to turn it down. But I would think if Bill Clinton did, you would think that the DJ would then oblige.
But what about all the other people who were
there?
That's
the thing. Were they dancing? Were they like hanging out? Were they enjoying it? And then one guy wants him to turn it down? I don't think you do that.
I know. It's a table of it's I get it. It's the Clintons, has-beens, John Bon Jovi, still fairly John Bon Jovi can still sell out stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
So we give him a pass. If Bon Jovi went over to ask him to turn the thing down, my guess is they would have done it. But Bon Jovi also has respect for the DJ. Right?
I bet.
Probably.
I'm sure.
It's, you know, that's a paying gig. Bon Jovi remembers when he used to be in the bars playing. And Corzine's like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Oh, crap. I'm in the wrong room. Along with his D.C. lobbyist, Liz Robbins. I never heard of her, but I think she's going to call Page Six. I swear to God. All right.
Big news.
Yeah.
In New York.
Okay. That's the thing. What I imagine here is, when Bill and Hillary are sitting around talking about this, about the world, I mean, imagine the stress in their relationship, because they're looking at each other, and they like the entire weight of all of this is on their shoulders in some way, shape, or form. If he didn't do what he did, she probably could have gotten elected.
You wonder,
right?
You do wonder. It became
He drew so much issue. Attention into that. You know, I mean, she was not a popular figure in the early 1990s because she was going to change health care.
Well, she would have been more in more credible standing to firmly point a finger in the direction of Trump on those issues had her husband not been guilty of so many of the same types of things.
And all he needed was 78,000 votes in Wisconsin
10,000 in Michigan. That's right. All you needed.
I mean, that's all they needed. And that would, you know, it would have been a different thing. So I think they just constantly look at the glare at each other across the table.
Yeah. I don't ever like to creep into other people's stuff, but there is certainly a lot of public pressure on them. And even his connectivity with Epstein and all these other things, you know, it's just not good.
All right. Let us now check in with Kim Gordon. What's going on in the news at the top of the hour?
Roe, the Chicago Teachers Union may be one step closer to a strike. We'll tell you why coming up.
Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN Chicago. And we've got top 5 to 5 coming your way right now. And then we've got thoughts. And we have A.B. Stoddard is going to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
She'll have some thoughts.
On that Monmouth poll in particular, that everyone's sort of shocked by how Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have surged to neck and neck with Biden.
So if one of them drops, so if Bernie drops out,
you would think the supporters would go to the other.
That's interesting. Still a lot of runway here, but
half of the Democrats are at 1% or less, by the way. Proving yet again, a couple of them might need to rethink the whole path to the presidency.
But all of a sudden, people are taking Andrew Yang more seriously than they are Buttigieg.
Right. He's trending upward, for sure.
Very interesting. It's all very interesting. I don't quite know what to make of any of it, but we'll find out. AB will make it all happen for us. Right now, more importantly, it's the time of day that everyone looks forward to.
The top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number 5.
The president spoke to reporters today after the G7 summit, and he said, you know, next year, well, why don't we make it the G8? What's wrong with Russia? It's fine.
Putin can come.
Yeah, no big deal.
Whether I win or not, I have to do the right thing. So I don't do things for political reasons. Is it good? Probably not. Maybe it is. I mean, a lot of people are smart. A lot of people say having Russia, which is a power, having them inside the room is better than having them outside the room. By the way, there were numerous people during the G7 that felt that way. And we didn't take a vote or anything, but we did discuss it. My inclination is to say, yes, they should be in. It was a President Obama. I'm not blaming him, but a lot of bad things happened with President Putin and President Obama.
I'm not blaming him. Yes, you are. That he tricked, he was completely tricked. That's what he said. Putin completely tricked Obama and invaded Crimea when Obama wasn't looking. He turned his back, and the next thing you know, invaded Crimea, didn't even know. Come on.
But we're moving forward, right?
There's another thing that I think that the president misses about what the G7 is that the G7 is not just the top economies in the world, because they're missing the number 2 economy in the world in the G7.
Mm-hmm.
There's no China in the G7, right? Would he be encouraging China to be in? If it's a big economy, why does he just want Putin in and not Xi in?
That might change next week.
It won't.
Right now, he's not really happy with China.
Right, but that's not what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's
trying to say he wouldn't be a member, but we would invite him to have him there. But that I don't think he'd be comfortable, Putin, showing up at something like this. Mm-hmm. Because he wouldn't be a full member and he couldn't handle that.
Okay. Who died and made him king of the world? All right, hold on. But it gets better. Because I just want everybody to imagine any other president in the history of the United States or any other tin horn dictator around the world suggesting this. And what would be your reaction to it? Next year, the G7 meeting will happen in America. So the president thought, well, as it turns out, I got a lot of things.
They got a spot for that.
Yeah.
I mean, venue.
If you really want to do it, I'll tell you, I got a perfect place in Miami. It's called Doral.
Doral happens to be within Miami. It's a city. It's a wonderful place. It's a very, very successful area of Florida. It's very importantly only 5 minutes from the airport. The airport's right next door.
Mm-hmm.
We have a series of magnificent buildings. We call them bungalows. They each hold from 50 to 70 very luxurious rooms with magnificent views. We have incredible conference rooms, incredible restaurants. It's like such a natural. We wouldn't even have to do the work that they did here, and they've done a beautiful job. They've really done a beautiful job. The ballrooms are among the biggest in Florida and the best.
Oh, no.
It's brand new, and they want that. My people wanted it. From my standpoint, I'm not going to make any money. In my opinion,
no,
I'm not going to make
not.
Any money.
In his opinion.
I don't want to make money.
No.
I don't care about making money.
Of course not. You never cared about making money or having gold things in your house. It's never about the money. You never ever bragged about how much money you made. It was never about the money for you. He's not political. Remember, he started out by saying, I don't think do things for politics. And then he ended up with, I got nothing to do with the money. It's got nothing to do with the money. Okay, it sounded like I have been to timeshare pitches that were less salesy than that.
That's true. Did he come home with free pots and pans?
Right. All of a sudden, you should have been giving away grapefruits and oranges in bags to people. Take these are from Doral. Take them home. Your wife will love them.
Little swag bag. Get you interested in the property for next year.
He sold his property. Okay. There are a lot of properties in America. There's a lot of places in America.
And Miami may not be the best place in the summer either. That's all I'm saying. Throwing that out there.
You could do the G7 and there's 50 states. You could do it anywhere you want to do it. You made it easier for Abe and put it in Hawaii. Although he's got a place in Hawaii too. So I Vegas maybe? That'd be fun.
Oh, gee. Can we trust our world leaders in Vegas? All of there.
I mean, but really? I mean, that's the best. It would be perfect. Why is he selling his own property that, by the way, was $175 million to put on this thing in Canada last year? We don't know what the final total was for Biarritz for France, but it was $175 million. Right, so imagine the rentals and all that. In my opinion, I wouldn't make money. In his opinion, he wouldn't make money.
I don't want to make money. I don't care about making money.
No, never. Never once has he cared about making money.
Beautiful bungalows, though. Amazing parking.
There's no way to find the bungalow park. Because I love that. He's selling it, and you're like...
He was almost selling through the clothes. They're all already shaking their heads. Like, hey, let's go.
Bungalows? 50
private?
To 75 private bungalows? That'd be beautiful.
We have a series of magnificent buildings. We call them bungalows.
Okay. Again, I just ask you, imagine any other president in the history of the United States, or again, I'm throwing in every tin horn dictator you ever thought of in your own mind, that was trying to sell his own properties arguably the most important meeting of world leaders. And again, the G7 is about democracies. It's the G7 democracies. And technically, Russia is a democracy, but Putin wins every time
election.
By 96%. Technically, Iraq was a democracy when Saddam Hussein would win by 103%.
Every time.
Yes. All right. Just saying. All right. Nothing to see here. Don't worry about it. Nothing here should make you feel uncomfortable.
It's a nice commercial for...
Although it did make me think, now Doral is a beautiful golf club.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
it's a beautiful
golf course.
You want to go there now.
Now I'm going to get a bungalow.
Yeah. But we didn't know they had bungalows.
So he realizes that even if he doesn't get the G7 there, great free publicity. I don't care about making money. I don't care.
Number four.
In Michigan, Marysville City Council candidate Gene Kramer. I blame Trump for this, too, by the way.
Uh-oh. What happened there?
Oh, boy. Wait to hear about this. She said she doesn't have any plans to back out of the race, despite coming under fire for comments that she made that I think some people might consider to be racist.
My suggestion, recommendation, keep Marysville a white community as much as possible. Seriously, in other words, no foreign-born people because of what, how can I say, in our past, what we have experienced, it's better to have it or have it simply American-born, put it that way.
Okay, and then
it's happening.
Yeah, I know. And then, after the forum, reporters decided. Exactly. Well, you want to clarify that?
Why do you think Marysville should stay white?
We like it the way it is. If people are coming here to get away from their own country, what they should do is, or need to do, is go back to their own country and straighten it out.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the Jews should have done when they were trying to get out of Europe in the 1930s.
Oh, geez. I think I need some Tylenol for my head right
now. I do, too. It's about to explode. She's also said some other really horrible things in her history.
I got more. But what about the Canadian couple who recently moved to Marysville?
They're both white.
So that's okay.
Yeah.
But she's foreign.
Right. I don't know if Canadian would be foreign.
Oh my God.
Was she produced at a Russian troll farm and then planted?
She's one of Putin's.
She's got 13 numbers after her name.
Right.
I just watched The Great Hack on Netflix. This is exactly what they were talking about.
Really? Is that a new show?
Oh, it's a documentary. You have to see it. It's all about Cambridge Analytica.
Ah. Okay, that's on my list officially.
There you go.
It's happening.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Right. And see, the thing is, see, here's the deal. This is the difference now. And this is provable. The difference is now people, there are a lot of people who've had those thoughts in their head, but they just never ran for office and said them out loud because they thought, well, I'm never going to get elected for having this thought. People aren't going to go with me. No, she's proud of these thoughts now. Because it's represented at the very, because it's reinforced to her on her Facebook page and on cable news and every once in a while on something that the President of the United States says. So it's okay. She also said that she doesn't mind black people as long as they marry within their race.
Right, like Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
They were the same race. That was one of her comments.
Yeah.
She's dropped out, by the way.
Yeah, her city council run had a good run.
She's done. Right. What do you do after that? Where do you work?
She did back out because it says she's now backed out.
An hour ago.
No? Yeah, all right, good. Too bad.
Good effort, though.
Great message.
Hey, fight for what you believe in, Jean Kramer.
She had a good run.
Stay on message.
Yeah. Stay on brand. Sure as hell stayed on brand.
You know what, Jean? You're too good for the Marysville City Council. You should run for... You know, actually, she could actually get a job in the cabinet probably now.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
He should go in and save her.
I like what she was saying. By the way, could you sell a bungalow at Doral?
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. We'll get to your three or two and your one.
She's a Russian operative. I'm convinced. Russian troll farm plant.
They're both white.
They're both white.
Well, they're Canadians, though.
Oh.
Are those fair? I guess that is foreign. Moron. All right, we'll get to your... Oh, God. Is it really? Really? All of a sudden, now the president seems completely rational trying to sell me a bungalow. Trying to sell Putin a bungalow at Doral next year.
You're thinking about it.
He could go to the G7. He's not a member, but he could be there because he tricked Obama. Black guy, not a Canadian. Married out of his race. No, wait, no. His mother did.
Oh, my God. Imagine how mad this woman has to be about that. We should have gotten her thoughts on the Obama presidency. All right. We'll get your 3, 2, and 1. But first, come on, Kim. What's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour?
We're following a groundbreaking ruling in Oklahoma over who's to blame for the opioid crisis.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Materan, Joe Donlin. Weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Thank you. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on WGN. Top 5-5.
Number 3.
Andrew Luck shocked the sporting world by retiring right before the Bears game on Saturday night down in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I didn't say I heard the reaction. Yeah, it hurt. I'll be honest, chap. It hurt.
He was booed off the field.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Guy who lives in constant pain, who retires, doesn't want to retire.
Tom Brady
had
something to say, Anna, about this. He appeared on WEEI's, the Wee Wee, the Greg Hill Show this morning.
Another number 12.
And he says he understood the reason to walk away.
You know, it's his life. Everyone has the right to choose what they want to do. And, you know, he had a great career, and he was a great player. So everybody wishes, you know, they could be healthy all the time. And it's a very, you know, it's a contact sport. And he's, you know, certainly had his fair share of injuries. So, you know, guys retire at different times. Some at the end of the season. I've seen a lot of guys retire before the season gets going, and this is just one of those examples.
It's pretty incredible. He's outlasted Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck.
Yeah, Andrew Luck is what, 29?
He's 29.
Gosh.
It's a bummer. Probably one of the most hyped college prospects ever coming into the draft 7 years ago.
Yeah. Which is why they got rid of Peyton Manning.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he went to go work for John Fox. Hey! All right, checking in at
number two.
This is a story from Kansas City, Missouri. You have to be prepared for this. Susie Torres thought she had water in her left ear.
I woke up Tuesday morning hearing a bunch of swooshing and water in my left ear.
Wouldn't go away. She went to the doctor. Medical assistant checked her out. Torres said while she did not know exactly what was in her ear at that point, she tried to keep her cool.
Ran out and said, I'm going to go get a couple more people. And she said, I think you have an insect in there. No, I didn't panic because I didn't know what exactly it was. And until she came back in and they told me it was a spider. They had a few tools and they worked their magic and got it out.
Oh,
never
God.
Thought that they Ew. Would crawl in your ear or any part of your body.
It's warm in there.
It turned out to be a brown recluse spider. Highly venomous!
No!
Ah!
In her ear!
And she said she looked and I looked okay and that I was lucky that I didn't get bitten by this recluse. I went and put some cotton balls in my ear last night because I didn't have any earplugs. So, yeah, I'm pretty terrified of the spiders.
Yeah.
I would be now for sure.
I think it's time to call, Erex or whatever. Go call one of those companies.
How lucky is she? A venomous spider living in her ear?
Oh, God.
Yuck.
Oh. And finally, we're going to end on a happy note.
Number one.
But a related note.
Hmm.
You know, there's a D23 big thing, the Disney convention over the weekend.
I was getting goosebumps reading about it on Twitter.
Yeah, you're one of those geeks, too.
I am.
So here's the deal. That the, they're unveiling a bunch of stuff that they're going to put on.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're also going to do this, like, Life According to Jeff Goldblum show.
On the Disney streaming service?
Yeah. So Jeff Goldblum was in an interview when he found out that Spider-Man may not be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe anymore because of a dispute with Sony.
Why do you think Spider-Man is such an important part of the MCU? Because there may be a little divorce happening.
No. This is the first I've heard of it.
Save Spider-Man?
I'm crestfallen. Save. What's happening? I didn't know any of this. I'm not a business person. You're speaking. Whatever you say is Greek to me. But all these, the mountains of Producore and I don't know. It'll all work out, I'm sure.
That's a good promo for a show. Because now you're going to just watch it to see if he's having a stroke.
What the hell did he just say?
Sort of wacky. I don't know. Answer. He was trying to dance a little bit, I think.
Is there something else we need to know here?
I was trying to figure out if this Life According to Jeff Goldblum was going to be the Grandmaster version of Jeff Goldblum from Thor Ragnarok. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
Oh, he was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sounded like he went that way right now.
Yeah, but no, you're getting this.
Who's your favorite Disney princess?
Besides you, let me see.
Oh, God.
Well, I do like part of their world. What are those things called? Oh, yeah. Feet. I want to be part of their world.
Can we get you as part of the live-action film?
I want to be Ariel.
Sorry to be cast. I hate to break it to you.
Who's playing that part? Halle Berry. I love her. She was wonderful in Monsters Ball. But why would... Bailey.
Oh, she's a younger Halle, but she's
okay.
The first one.
All right, I'm done.
What's happening?
I don't know.
Not prepared to talk at the Disney launch?
Apparently not.
Of the streaming service?
I got to say, though, he made more sense than Trump selling Doral.
Yes, he did.
The top five at five.
Kim's News being brought to you by Penny Mustard Furnishings.
Doral happens to be within Miami. It's a city. It's a wonderful place. It's a very, very successful area of Florida. It's very importantly only 5 minutes from the airport. The airport's right next door. We have a series of magnificent buildings. We call them bungalows. They each hold from 50 to 70 very luxurious rooms with magnificent views. We have incredible conference rooms, incredible restaurants. It's like such a natural. We wouldn't even have to do the work that they did here. And they've done a beautiful job. They've really done a beautiful job. The ballrooms are among the biggest in Florida and the best. Yeah. It's brand new. And they want that. My people wanted it. From my standpoint, I'm not going to make any money. My opinion, I'm not going to make any money.
No.
I don't want to make money. I don't care about making money.
No. That's the President of the United States at the G7 today, selling his property for the next G7 event in America next year.
Uh-huh. Selling hard.
Yeah.
Gorgeous bungalows.
Bungalows. They call them bungalows. Okay. There you go. A.B. Stoddard joins us, realclearpolitics.com. Okay, A.B.
So that's happening. So,
yeah. You know, I like to sometimes play the imagine anybody else saying it game, and I just cannot imagine anybody. I mean, it's kind of shameless. I mean, isn't it responsible as an owner, you know, just an ethical thing? Well, you know, listen, I got an interest in that. It probably would look bad if they did it at my property, right? I'm president of the United States. I'm president for everybody. I have to be responsible to everybody. Like, you know, somebody else should be profiting from this, not me. You know, doesn't that seem like the right thing? Not him! Not him!
It's the definition of shameless self-promotion. There's no shame anywhere.
No, none.
In that presentation with the tinkling piano music in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, he is like having a ball. He's in a conference room and he's selling this resort and he knows how to do it. And it's really where he's happiest. Like you can, you know, he just gets on it and he's totally in his place. He's in the zone. And you know, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington or whatever that crew, they just, you know, they're always updating this report. He's up to 2,310 conflicts of interest with his business, businesses he still runs and profits from while he's president. And it just rolls on. This is really, no one stopped him. The courts haven't yet, and they might, but... You know, it's until then, you just go for it. And I think we've seen it. I mean, it's just, you know, he's always at a Trump property. He's always playing golf, Mar-a-Lago. It just goes on and on. And he wants to have Putin, and it's going to be great.
Yeah. You know what? Now, Putin gets his own bungalow. That's going to be the best.
Oh, geez.
Everyone gets their own bungalow. If she wants to come too, he can have his own bungalow.
When they said, would you invite Putin? And he was like, oh, yes, of course I'd invite him. And then he goes, he's a very proud man. I mean, I don't know if he'd want to come from a psychological standpoint.
Yeah, of course. Right. Yeah. I know. I also thought the whole thing. Do you have the Kim Jong-un thing about
Melania?
Because that to me, I know I'm asking for stuff. I don't even know if they have it set up right now. But that is that was just the strangest moment of this whole deal was he's there, he's talking, and it's about and Kim Jong-un. Again, let's just play the game. Anybody else say this? It doesn't make any sense. Kim Jong-un is one of the most notorious mass murderers of the 21st century. This is not a guy that you want to necessarily build up as a good guy.
Kim Jong-un, who I've gotten to know extremely well. First Lady has gotten to know Kim Jong-un, and I think she'd agree with me. He is a man with a country that has tremendous potential. Mm-hmm. You're in between China, Russia, and South Korea. People want to get to South Korea. They got to get there somehow, and if they're going to do anything other than essentially fly, they want to go through. So railroads and everything else, so many things want to happen
right
there.
Yeah, that's if you want to get to South Korea, it can only go through North Korea. That's if you're coming from Siberia. That's the problem with that.
The only thing that can happen there.
Eastern Russia.
And, of course, the White House later on had to admit right that Melania Trump has actually never met the great chairman.
Right. Yes.
Never met him.
Yeah. Dear friend. But
clarified that she felt as if she had based on...
No, 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 no. They clarified
that she felt.
No, no, right. He felt that. No, he clarified
he felt that she felt she had right met Kim Jong Un based on his conversations about the man.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
it's Kim Jong Un. It's Kim Jong Un. Oh my God! Which is not related.
The other day, when I think it was the first day of the G7, when he was asked about him testing again, he goes, you know, he likes testing missiles.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, the guy likes to test. So what?
He likes it.
You want to test things. You want to make sure they work. Look at the Russians. They couldn't get it to work. You got to test. All right. I got to ask you something. Now, this Joe Walsh is running for president. I know that I was just told in my ear by our erstwhile producer Jeff Carlin that you've taken up the a little bit of the interest in what this guy's doing. I'm going to try to disabuse you of this notion
for him because everyone is like bashing him for being, you know, some kind of scoundrel. And my feeling is like, are we pretending he's going to win the nomination? Like he's you know, he said he's sorry. He might be enjoying his, you know, tour on cable news, but he's actually trying to rough up Donald Trump. And he just might. And he might depress a few Republican voters into not turning out and raise the issue of Trump's fitness. And so, you know, I was on Nicole Walls' show today, and everyone's like, you're a racist, and, like, really going after him. And I don't think Joe's point was, like, to come in here and run against Trump as a racist. And I think he's just saying, look, I was one of these, like, knuckle-dragging partisans, and now I realize it was really dangerous. And, look, I like, you know, people who leave tribalism. I'm up with that.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, he's trying to tell people, you know, so he's running to the right of Bill Weld, and he's trying to, you know, if he starts talking about policy, like, limited government and, you know, raging debt. I mean, maybe, like I said, he depresses a few votes, and that's how Trump won, was because Democrats had a few depressed, you know, non-voters, and they didn't turn out for Hillary. So I just don't understand this big thing where, like, we're taking Joe Walsh seriously, and we're crushed that he's not perfect. Like, who cares?
But he's saying it's not about the issues. When he's on the Sunday morning talk shows, I wouldn't even be in this race if it were the issues. It's really about the morals. That's the point he's making. And if you look at his moral history, I don't, aren't there other people within the Republican Party who could stand up and do this?
He's an asshat.
No, I think that's true. No, I really take your point, Anna, but he was also saying, I've heard him in every interview say, why hasn't someone stood up? Why hasn't someone stood up? So it's true. I would help Joan hone his message a little more tightly if I were, you know, in his camp. But I'm just saying, like, why are we piling on Joe Walsh? Whatever. It's just another sideshow. Scaramucci.
We just know him too well here.
It's kind of harmless, is what I'm saying.
Well, it is. Okay. Now, I would say that if we didn't spend a lot of time with him here, unfortunately, when he was, you know, in radio here.
I respect that.
And then, and then when he was running for Congress, and then his Twitter feed, you know, Obama's a Muslim, Happy New Year. His use of the N-word on the air, on the radio, just to prove he could say it.
On social media, he's used all kinds of slurs, including the N-word.
Yeah.
I mean, he talked about the Sandy Hook parents and how they're just politically motivated. I mean, way to show empathy after they lost their children. I mean, they're just, there's so many examples.
Yeah.
So
I mean, he was an intentional asshat. He was a guy who went out attempting to just be a jerk so he'd get it, you know, could draw attention to himself because he didn't have to worry about where his next meal's coming from.
And I get all that. I'm just saying that him. Then why don't we talk about Scaramucci? Like, well, I guess we did last time we talked. But I mean, you know, now he's on TV every day. He's like a presidential expert or whatever.
Yes,
It is what it is, right? These people are seeing the light late. We're all saying they're, you know, hypocrites, but they're trying to stop Trump, and they think he's unfit, and they think he's a threat to democracy. And, you know, on those grounds, I appreciate the effort because I happen to agree that he's unfit. Like, forget all the policies, right?
That's true. So you got Scaramucci, who obviously has an axe to grind. You got a guy who is, you know, who is a professional clown who just wants to get invited to the next birthday party in Joe Walsh. Now, here, booked the next birthday party. Never invited. This is not a guy that gets invited to any party, I would imagine. Here is the question. Why isn't a real Republican?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't there somebody in leadership? Or why isn't even at this point, you know, there's an opportunity, you know, for a Paul Ryan to step up and say, this is irresponsible. Somebody who is real, somebody who has actual, you know, bona fides to step up and say this and has an audience and or somebody who's been in the administration. You know, you and I have often talked about Dan Coats and people, other people that you and I know and respect who have been in and out of this, in and out of that administration already. Those are the people who have to stand up, not Scaramucci.
Agreed, but let's just admit why they're not. I mean, they're not because they've lost the voters. The voters don't care about limited government. The voters don't care about free trade. The voters don't care about eminent domain. The voters don't care about cruelty. The voters don't care about lying, and they don't care about deficits or debt. They care about Trump, and he has an 88% approval rating with them. And so no real Republican is going to go in and pretend they have a real chance to take the nomination away from him when the RNC is a subsidiary of the Trump Organization. They hold their events at his properties. They rent a place in Trump Tower. They've blocked at the state level and local level any means by which, changing rules, anyone could come in and challenge the president in the primary process, you know, ultimately locking it down for him. So no real Republican is going to waste their time. They don't think the voters would listen. So that's why you have these kind of sideshows, which is an effort to just call attention to, you know, all the hypocrisy, all the lying, all the unfit and all that stuff, and then hope, you know, in doing this, you just raise the dialogue, the debate, and you depress Republican voters. But there's no one is going to challenge him for the nomination and win.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, just say this, that he is going to lose when he bombs this hurricane that's coming up through the Caribbean right now.
I think,
when he takes out Nevis and St. Kitts with a 10 megaton thermonuclear weapon, then we're going to know.
Every time he does something completely loopy, people on Twitter say, this is just what the voters of Pennsylvania, Wisconsin were asking for.
Right. Well, I think they were.
When I read the hurricane plan, I was like, that's what they wanted.
Right.
The working class whites in Michigan were like, it's time we nuke hurricanes.
Well, let me tell you, the working class whites in Michigan, they missed an opportunity. Did you hear about the woman who was running for the city council in Marysville, Michigan?
Oh, yeah. That's really pretty.
Yeah. She wants, you don't want any foreign-born people in her town. What about the Canadians? Well, they're white. So that's okay. And you know what? I mean, this is where we live now, where people can say that, again, shamelessly. Whose fault is that?
Absolutely. There was a KKK rally in North Carolina this weekend. Come on now. Mm-hmm. This isn't new. And, I mean, we all know he's made it perfectly clear to his voters the only immigrants he likes are blondes from Norway.
and he doesn't want anyone else from the asshole countries. I mean, he's pretty open about it.
Yeah. AB, do you believe with this poll, this Monmouth poll that's stirring up a lot of talk today, that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are way up there tied with Biden? I mean, it seems like a little bit of an outlier poll because they only had 300 people in the sample size. But a month ago, you couldn't find a poll that didn't show Biden so far ahead that he was doubling even his nearest competitor.
You are right. This is the first poll that he has not led.
Yeah.
And I think it's a serious sign for the Biden campaign. I think they have to be, you know, really scared by it. They have to understand his shortcomings and his liabilities. They have to appreciate Warren's strength. I don't think that this means that she's the nominee, and I'm very confused by sort of Sanders' durability when he hasn't been doing so well, and some other polling he's been slipping. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A lot will happen in the next debate, and I am. I think, you know, what the party kind of operatives and the party establishment sources tell me is that they're so interested by in the polling is that people are not wedded to a candidate and they have like three people they like. And so that basically, although we think it's cementing so much, it's really not cementing yet.
Right,
and so
right,
she is going to do really well in places with college whites. She's going to do well in Iowa. I mean, she is a threat in states where she has that educated progressive white coalition. But until she wins over black support, I'm not, you know, going to write off Joe Biden. But it's so interesting. It's very volatile. Harris is really stuck. Beto and Buttigieg are stuck. Booker is rose up a little in that poll, but it's. I'm stunned that we're really, you know, looking at that Sanders and Warren and Biden are the top three.
So let me just ask you very quickly, if Sanders got out, would Warren be the leader, the heads up leader?
Yes, I think so.
Right.
I do.
Okay.
Although a lot of like Bernie and Biden voters say their second choice is Bernie or Biden, which is really weird because they have a working class white, less educated block of voters. But I really don't think Bernie's going to get out. I think he's going to stay until the bitter end, and I think it could be a real mess.
Oh, God.
I just think he has this really durable, like, right, loyal support that hangs with him, and it's not enough to get the nomination, but, you know, he's not interested in going away.
Yeah, right. Okay, I got to go. Right now I got a guy out front who's selling me a timeshare at Doral right now, and I got to get out there before I got to get there because I want in the Putin suite is what I want at Doral. All right,
Putin bungalow.
Thank you, AB.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, AB.
AB Stoddard, Real Clear Politics. Right now, Kim, what's coming up at the top?
Some community groups grading Mayor Lightfoot on her first 100 days in office.
Coming up at 6:40, Adam Hogue is going to be here. Did you see that Sports Illustrated said that the Bears are going to go 7-9?
I did see that.
Yeah.
How does that make any sense?
Adam Hogue will explain that coming up at 6:40. But in the meantime, there is a story that's going to make everybody very, very happy if you're a drug dealer. Your weed dealer is going to profit from the new legalization of marijuana on January 1.
Everyone at first was saying, people who sell it in the black market or the illicit market would be, like, driven out of business by the new recreational ruling, right, in early 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God. I was worried about all the drug dealers.
Yeah. Now you can rest assured, Kev, any of the drug dealers out there, they're going to be okay.
Because it's going to be, because people's habits, the basic premise here are, A, people's habits die hard. Which is exactly why people get into being drug dealers in the first place, because they know that. That's an immutable law. Secondly, it's because it's just going to be cheaper. Because your dude, who you're used to dealing with, and he's got the stuff you like, he's always going to be able to, you know, provide for you, no one's got to pay the taxes.
But if I'm a consumer, I'm totally pinning my drug dealer up against the legal stuff. So they're offering me this, you're offering me this. Hell, your product's this, your product's that. Maybe we amp it up a little bit.
Well, chances are,
very Donald Trump of you.
He's going to come through for you, your weed guy. Because the licensed pot shots aren't going to be able to compete. initially.
On a money basis, on a price basis.
On price, you're right. Quality and the other things you're looking for. I suppose, you know, you can find a lot better options there, at least have a little more reliability and a place to go back to.
With people I know that smoke a lot of weed, or even just like a very casual amount of it, they've all been in, I can see them sticking with their guys, but I think all of them are so curious to see how it works. Like, they're all very excited. They're excited to go to these stores.
Do you think so? There's no like stigma attached to it, right? Because I would think some people would feel like, I don't want to show up there and necessarily see everyone I know. You know what I mean? Like, right away.
If you see them, then
they're too, I suppose.
No.
What do you mean, your nanny from your childhood or something?
I don't know. Maybe your teacher from your kid's kindergarten or something. Maybe you don't want to see them at that particular moment. And then you're both there, so you both can have,
a strip club.
I know, but...
Is that like being in the plastic surgeon's office or something?
Same thing.
It's funny talking to parents, you know, who we used to fear of getting caught, like, you know, we're gonna sneak a couple beers in the basement. And then now we're at, like, family events and everyone's drinking on a patio. And next thing you know, you have a conversation about it. And they're like, so how can we get some of this stuff?
Okay.
It's like, these were the same parents that were disciplining us when we were kids for messing around in the basement.
Right.
And now they're like, hey, can we get some weed?
I know. I'm having these conversations with my own family now.
It's hilarious.
In a way of like, Dad, let me help you out with this. It's like, wait, what? Hey, okay. Oh, you're having trouble sleeping, Dad? Okay.
I've got what's right for you.
Yeah. The only thing I can do is go back to that situation in California a couple weeks ago. It was a CB scene in L.A.
But that's L.A.
At the pot shop. Yeah, I know.
And maybe it'll get there here.
I think it will.
I don't know, January 1st or February 1st. I don't know. I don't know. There might be some awkward runnings into at the pot shop.
See, Uncle Mike, you take the cartridge and you stick it in this pen, and then you hold the button and inhale. So where do I light it? There's no lighting. It's just a pen with an oil. You just hold the button.
See your grandma in there or something? I don't know. Could be awkward.
grandma's like, makes the sex better.
Oh,
grandma! Oh my God! Oh no!
It could happen.
You're gonna snap a hip.
I would love to see a teacher who used to be such like a
hard ass
on me. Just walk in there. Oh, how you doing? How's history class going? It's just to see people in a whole different light.
Okay, I'm going to tell you why I disagree with the summation here of this article, which is that your local weed dealer is still going to be fine, because I think law enforcement is going to come down harder now on those guys because there's going to be a business interest behind them to do it, right? Like the guys who are making bootleg liquor after the end of Prohibition got taken out by there's going to be so much legit business behind this that it's going to create a lot of pressure on those guys, and they're also going to want to get co-opted into it, right?
What do you mean, like the guys who are selling it illegally are going to want to get in?
Well, I mean, if there's guys who are selling it, the problem is you got your gang's activities, right? I mean, making that I think there's going to be a bigger crackdown now because there's actually a business interest, a legit big time, because private equity is getting involved in this. There's a lot of money coming into this.
For sure.
And those people are politically active, and those are the people who pay for the politicians. I don't know. I saw this in The Godfather, and I'm going to tell you that they are going to make it very, very, very difficult on people who are trying to get around this.
Well, I think they probably won't want to crack down on the supply as well, because you think that it's going to be harder potentially for the guys doing it illegally to get the supply when there's a legit place to send it, maybe at a higher dollar.
Well, also now, but here's the other thing: you have legit farmers. But then it's stuff that's coming from Central and South America. I especially see the Trump administration doing this if they're in office after 2020. I see them bringing back paraquat or one of those other, because I mean, people remember this. The U.S. government was going down and spraying this herbicide on the pot plants in Mexico and in Central America, trying to kill the pot plants. But guys are still farming them and setting them up here, and people who were smoking it were getting super sick.
Oh, gosh.
So, and creating lung problems. So even the idea of the scare of paraquat being on, you know, in your marijuana was enough to
send people,
you know, and that's, I see, and this, now that would be legal, people are still willing to make the risk. But one of the things that they did when alcohol, the argument that, which was true, the argument after the end of Prohibition was that, listen, these are legitimate businesses making this. The stuff you're going to drink here is safe. Canadian Club is safe. But what you're getting from the guy in the bathtub gin, not safe. Because people were going blind in one eye and all kinds of crazy things were happening during that. If they make street weed dangerous, people will automatically have to move over. And just trust me that the business interests are going to want that.
I'm sure they will.
The investors in this are going to want that. And they'll find a way. They always do. There's always a guy. Everybody's got a guy. You know, it's just the rule. And there will be somebody who will get into government and say, you know what we need to do? We need to do this drug interdiction thing. It'll be good, especially, I would imagine. I'm surprised that they haven't thought about that in the Trump administration yet.
Well, wasn't one of the goals of this, too, to sort of stop the gang-related supply and selling on the streets? I don't know that it will, but I think that was one of the reasons cited when people were lobbying.
That's exactly what,
whole thing.
Well, they had to come up with something because they knew they were selling
it. Got to come up with it.
They were selling something that everybody was going was bad for you before. Nah, it's good for you now.
Oh, it's okay now. It's fine.
So,
but as you saw, when you went to the legal dispensary in L.A., it still is pretty, it was quite a ride after you did your you smoked it. Didn't you smoke the oil?
Yeah. Yeah. The indica. Granddaddy Kush. I'd like to do the live reads for Granddaddy Kush when they bring that up here.
You could be the endorser on that one.
Very professional and technical.
Granddaddy Kush. I can't remember anything about it, but it's really good stuff.
5 years after Colorado legalized it, 82% are purchasing through the legal market.
Yeah.
It's going to happen that way.
I think people... And again, when you see the experience of what these companies are doing, even the medical marijuana guys here now, when you go into those stores, that's like a whole other... It's not like a head shop. You feel like you're walking into like a med spa kind of a thing. When you and now in California, when you go to buy it in a commercial, sales area, not medical, but commercial, it looks like an Apple store, like the Apple, like a Apple store, or a computer store. Right, not like selling apples, but like an actual
like high tech with iPads to check you out and
the
people.
Genius bar if you're tweaking too hard.
No, but
this feels weird. Man.
But they do. They have a genius that just comes up to you.
Yeah, and they get
and they genius you on the thing.
Do they allow you to sample it there on site?
No,
can't do that.
No, but they explain what it's going to do to you.
Can you return it if you don't get the quality that you were looking for?
I'm like, Chad, how do you know what it's going to do to me? Right? I mean, that was the thing. And they're so absolutely certain about it. This high is specifically for... And then they have, like a whole list of things. And you're like, yeah, you would never possibly know that.
So what did you tell them you wanted to...
I didn't tell... I was there when it was being... I was in a group of people.
During the... Yeah.
I didn't know what to ask. I'm just with a bunch
this
of roadies.
This is Ro, like, defending himself.
Exactly.
He's a junior high student. I happened
to be there.
I was just around them. They made me do it.
You can totally see Ro in high school. No, the transaction was taking place, and I was just present.
It was secondhand smoke. I don't know.
Oh, my God. I don't know what happened.
It was Jimmy's big brother.
I couldn't feel my left arm anymore, but it had nothing to do with me. It was them.
I thought it was gonna get beat up. I was with a bunch of roadies. Can I just tell you that what happens when you're with a bunch of roadies?
What happens?
That's they know things. They've done things. The guys that were I was with knew what they were asking for. So that was like the conversation was surrounding that. I wasn't purchasing. I was just interested in the whole process of it. That is for the God.
His research. Whose research?
Mom.
Oh, God. Mom. I'm sorry. Yeah. And I got a T-shirt. Okay, I got a T-shirt.
Uh-huh. It's all legal.
All right.
There.
I got to go. I got to talk to Hogue about whether the Bears are going to be 7-9. And then I might have to...
Yeah, go back to California.
I was hitting the Granddaddy Kush.
Granddaddy Kush. They still can't help themselves when they name this stuff. Like in liquor, at least they have like old timey names, right?
Uh-huh.
For the liquor, right? Either family names or old timey names.
Yeah.
See, for the stoners, they all got to be sort of
like Puff the Magic Dragony.
Yeah, they got to be all
rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, they got to be like hippies about it. All right. Let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
One Illinois college campus is now 100% smoke free.
Hang on once. Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's what we got going here. Coming up, Adam Hogue is going to join us, Bears Insider. Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated has the Bears going 7-9 and being dead last in the NFC North. What the hell is that?
Crazy talk.
Now, they do have the toughest schedule in football this year. Right?
They'll rise to the challenge.
So, Adam will explain maybe what they were thinking or why they would come to that conclusion or how crazy are they? Because I've never been more excited. I don't think I was this excited. I think I was pretty excited in 85 because they were great in 84, but they just had injuries. So if they stayed healthy, they were going to be good. And last year, they were going to be great, right? And they had, they were injury free.
Yeah. It's a pretty exciting season.
Yeah. Until?
Until we know what happened. Yep. That happened.
Yeah. All right. Kev, you're being very quiet about this.
It just doesn't do it. It doesn't upset me. It's just a dumb prediction.
Well, are they normally totally way off? Sports Illustrated?
I would have to look. I mean, it's Sports Illustrated. You normally respect that. But, how could you possibly come to that conclusion?
Doesn't make sense.
I don't really get it. I felt like they sort of snuck up on people last year. I don't think anybody expected them to be that good last year.
No, for
Made
sure.
Huge strides, but... I mean, they're just loaded with talent. It's undeniable. You're lying to yourself if you don't think this is going to be a good team. Obviously, with any team, if injuries pop in here and there, it's going to change the course of your season, but come on.
Sports Illustrated can't predict the injuries.
Right. This has nothing to do with it. Yeah. I think it's mostly because people are still not convinced about the offense, which is fine, but I think anybody watching them closely and you see the amount of talent they do have in the offense and the fact that it's a second year in Nagy's offense, the addition of David Montgomery... It changes the outlook of where the offense is headed.
So much rides on Trubisky. I know. I get it. And
he went 12-4, and he had an up and down year. He had a solid year, but I think there were some games where you're like, that was really bad.
He missed two games. Last
two
year?
Games, yeah.
Yeah. And he's not really been. I don't know. I'm so looking forward to this.
Only 10 days away.
Now everything rides on that game against Green Bay.
What, you mean you're just, that's it?
Because if they lose that game, they are going to go 7-9. I mean, it's like, oh, no!
It does feel like there's a lot of weight on week one. It is week one, and if they don't win, there's just so much positive momentum. If they were to lose that game, especially with the way last year's week one went, it would kind of give you a bad taste in your mouth. But
last year, no one expected them to win in week one up in Green Bay.
That's true.
Right? And then when they played the first half, you're like, oh my God, who are those guys?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, the season's not doomed, obviously, if they lose week one. It just...
I don't feel good about this. Why would Sports Illustrated ruin my week by saying something like this? How dare they?
I blame it on a Russian troll farm somewhere.
Yes. Yes, and that woman in Michigan, yeah, and Trump and the Doral Country Club and all of it.
Mm-hmm.
They call them bungalows. All right, here we go. We got Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN News right now.
Illinois
being brought to you by, excuse me, hold on.
Okay.
Don't get ahead of yourself. Green Tea Services. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlanchis.
Yes.
All right. Kevin Powell's in the studio with us right now. Adam Hoge is joining us on his super secret satellite. And, all right. I got to know the answer. Bears insider Adam Hoge.
Okay.
Do you believe that the Sports Illustrated is now run by a Russian troll farm because they predicted the Bears are going to go 7-9 and be dead last in the NFC North?
You know, I hadn't thought about it like that, but that suddenly makes a lot of sense.
No?
Right? That's what my initial thought was, Adam, because this can't be real. They're reasoning why. How could you possibly predict the Bears going 7-9?
You know what's crazy? They're not the only ones. There's a...
Oh, my God!
What?
Yeah, there's an analytical website that's based more on crunching the numbers. It's sort of like the what Pecota is to baseball. It's footballoutsiders.com. It's not quite like Pecota, but it's similar in that regard. And they also predict 7-9 with the Bears being worse than the Detroit Lions. I gotta say, guys, I just don't see that. I know I'm more on the optimistic end of things, but I also tend to all think about worst case scenario. Like, all right, which is what? And I know we don't want to talk about this, but let's say Mitch Trubisky gets hurt, right? You still have an outstanding defense. And Chase Daniel proved last year as a backup quarterback, he's serviceable and he can find a way to win probably about half the game. So I guess that's the only scenario in which they come close to 7-9. I just don't really see it. I think they're way too good. And I think here's the one thing why I think everyone's missing when they start talking about this Bears team regressing. I think it has way too much to do with addition and subtractions overall and free agency or whatever, and the fact they didn't have a first or second round draft pick. So on a sheet of paper, that doesn't look great. But there's so much improvement that should happen from within on this roster. And I can go through a lot of it. But just look at a guy like Roquan Smith. I think Roquan Smith could be an all-pro by the end of this year. I really think he can be that good on this defense. So all of a sudden, you're adding another all-pro to this defense. I just don't see them regressing. I really don't.
Well, that's where a lot of my optimism comes from this, Adam, is the fact that there is so much young talent. Even Anthony Miller, who was back at practice today after missing Sunday, he's a guy you could see having a big year and an impactful season for the Bears. There's just so much progress to be made, not to mention the progress that we're expecting from Mitch Trubisky in his second year in Matt Nagy's offense. So, and plus with the Pecota thing, I don't want to get a nerdy stat stuff. I don't completely discount a lot of that stuff. I think there's value there. But Pecota bases it off 162 games. There's so much more evidence in a baseball season and data to work with compared to a football season. It is just different.
Yeah, baseball's more geared towards number crunching and analytics. There's a lot of that.
You people are not making me feel better in one way, shape, or form.
I'm trying, Ro.
I think I am, because my point is I am kind of just dismissing the 7-9 prediction. You said what could be worst case scenario, Adam? Yes, it would be injuries. 7-9 to me sounds like that would be the worst case scenario. So you're telling me that's what they're predicting, a 7-9 finish?
But they're not. That's what they're not basing off of. That's why I don't understand the logic.
Right.
How can they be 7-9 and be the worst team in the NFC North, though?
It's going to be a great division.
Is it really going to be a great division?
I think it's going to be tough.
I think so. I think, let me actually rephrase that. I don't necessarily think it's going to be great. Like, I'm not sure there's more than one Super Bowl contender here. I think the Bears are that Super Bowl contender.
They're not the AFC West.
Correct. I think where it's going to be tougher is I think the other three teams are going to be improved. Now, I'm not saying the Lions are going to be great. I think they're just not going to be a pushover, and they usually aren't a pushover anyway. The Lions are just sort of always there.
These teams always play each other tough no matter what, except for that last game in Minnesota, whatever the hell that thing is, because one team's lying down to the other for some reason.
But I do think the Packers and Vikings are going to be better teams, and when I say better, I think instead of just sort of floundering at or below 500 and being disappointments, I think they're both going to take a step forward and be fringe wildcard contenders. I still think the Bears top to bottom at the best roster in the division, but all of a sudden, that's six games of your schedule, and it's already a really tough schedule when you got teams like the Chargers and Chiefs, speaking of the AFC West, on there. You play the AFC West this season. So the whole thing, if there is regression, with the Bears from a record perspective, this could be a better team that wins less games mm-hmm. just because of the schedule. Mm-hmm. That I get. If you want to make that argument, I understand. Yeah. But 7-9, right. Come on.
Crazy.
And much of it is, I mentioned Mitch Trubisky. Adam, you did a pretty impressive piece. It's up at WGNradio.com where you went back and completely abandoned your family and locked yourself into your office and looked at every single one of Mitch Trubisky's passes from last season, and you broke it down in a lengthy piece. I guess just plug it. What did you see from going back and watching every single pass from Mitch Trubisky last year?
Yeah, it's not inaccurate. I don't think my family's seen me since January. It's kind of weird. It was quite the project that I decided to embark on during the off season. It's not like I spent the entire off season. I picked out chunks and weeks here and there, but it just took a really long time. Here's what I think the conclusions are. And of course, you can read the whole thing at WGNradio.com. But a couple things stood out to me. First and foremost, and I know we don't want to relive week one against Green Bay last year when they blew the game, but Mitch in that game was so good early with scripted plays that were all set up in the week leading up to the game, right? And then once the Packers adjusted, he got worse as that game went along, and he looked uncomfortable in the fourth quarter on the final drive when they really couldn't even complete a pass. If you compare that to the end of the year, which was the opposite, Mitch was actually quite bad in the first half against the Eagles, but got stronger as the game went along. He was no longer relying on the script that was put together during the week. He could adjust as teams adjusted to him. The entire offense could adjust. And they were actually playing their best football late in games, especially on third down, which is the money down. So if you look at it like that, yes, it was an up and down year. It was a mixed bag overall for Mitchell Trubisky. But I see a lot of progress in just looking at it that way, that he got better as the season went along and as games went along, and he was playing his best football in the fourth quarter and on third down, which is incredibly important for quarterbacks.
You know, as much as the Parkey double doink has stuck with me since that horrible moment, so too has the Mitch Trubisky throw to Allen Robinson with 44 seconds remaining. Look, I'm not putting him on even close to the level of these quarterbacks. I'm just using it as an example. The Tom Brady's, the Ben Roethlisberger's, the Phillip Rivers. When the Bears got the ball with whatever, 40-whatever seconds were left, those are moments where, like, if a Tom Brady got the ball, you'd be like, nah, there's probably a good shot he's going to get them in field goal range, right?
Right.
And then the throw he had to Allen Robinson with 44 seconds left, I went back and watched that play. I forgot how much pressure he had in his face underneath the safety, over the cornerback, dropped it in, got them into field goal range. That, for as negative as that is, the double doink has stuck with me all offseason, that throw from Mitch has stuck with me since that game.
Yeah, he took a big shot on that play, and that's one thing I noticed going through this whole process was that's the same exact play they ran on the touchdown in the fourth quarter. People forget, Mitch didn't just set up the field goal. They were trailing twice in the fourth quarter. He led a touchdown drive early in the fourth quarter, put the team ahead, and then the defense did the unthinkable that we hadn't seen all year, and they coughed up the lead. No one thought that was going to happen, especially at home. What did he do? He goes right down the field, sets them up for a field goal that unfortunately was missed. But they ran the same exact play on both of those plays I'm talking about. The touchdown to Allen Robinson, which was against man defense, and then the big throw that you just described pretty perfectly, Kevin, which was against zone defense. And without getting two X's and O's,
Hold on.
Feel better, Ro?
They're 14-2. This was fake sports.
It was.
Fake sports is what this was.
Sports Illustrated lost a little clout with you.
Yeah.
But can you talk about the kicker situation? Because I think there's a lot of confidence boosted in Bears fans after seeing Eddie Pinheiro kick the 58-yarder and really seem to perform, step up.
Yeah, this is a little bit easier to break down than going through 581 plays. The kick went right down the middle, and it went far. And it looked really, really good. And that's what we need from the kickers, right, at this point. It's been so up and down. It's been so choppy. And to see him, Eddie Pinheiro, come out and make that big field goal against the Colts, it felt like a big preseason moment. Now, at the same time, 10 seconds went by in my head, and I was like, yeah, what if he misses the first kick against the Packers? Then all that clout, you know, it goes away. But I do think it was a big confidence booster, and I think barring a disastrous game on Thursday night against the Titans, Eddie Pinheiro will be the Bears kicker against the Packers, which is just a week and a half away.
Hmm.
There was some injury news, fairly significant. I realize it's a backup tackle, but that's one kind of question mark, I think, heading into the season, is that swing tackle and depth on the offensive line.
So the fascinating thing to me about this is they took Bradley Saul, who was the swing tackle last year, and turned him into a tight end. He lost 40 plus pounds, and he's now a tight end. And the two guys that they had replace him, kind of competing, one's a veteran named T.J. Clemmings, who tore his quad, or I'm assuming it's torn if he's out for the year, the other day. And so he's out. And then Rashad Coward, who was on the team last year, but now he's got an elbow injury. So all of a sudden, can you pack 40 pounds back on this guy by September 5th? I think that'd be pretty hard to do. But they don't have a swing tackle all of a sudden to back up Charles Leno Jr. and Bobby Massey, who, by the way, are two of the most dependable tackles in the league. And as long as they stay healthy,
they pick a guy up on there's cuts are coming.
They might have to. They might be able to find
someone.
This might be a
spot where you pick somebody up off a waiver.
Hey,
what you're going to need it?
What'd you make of the Andrew Luck spectacle over the past few days?
Unbelievable. I mean, really, it's become such a polarizing topic. I'm not really sure why. I just think it's an enormous story. And something we're just, you never know with these football players, and it's not just quarterbacks. Not everybody loves playing football. It's really, really hard. And I see this throughout the season, the beating that these players take. Not everyone wants to go through it. And it's just amazing to see a guy so talented at the age of 29 just walk away.
And he left so $58 million on the table.
Yeah, the Colts, I thought, was a classy move because it was Luck could have had to technically owe them about $12 million from a prorated signing bonus thing, and the Colts just kind of had a handshake agreement, and they had a financial settlement and called it a day.
Well, you don't want to make it ugly in case he changes his mind down the road.
That's true.
And can I say another thing? Like, I know the booing from the fans was stupid, obviously, but do we realize we're talking about fans that are still there in the fourth quarter of a meaningless preseason game on a Saturday
very
night?
Very good point.
Right.
What else are you doing? Like, this is the lowest common denominator football fan that possibly could have been left in that stadium, and I'm not defending what they did, but their favorite player, half of them were wearing number 12 jerseys. They just found out on their phone that he's retiring, and he's standing right in front of them. I mean, what are you expecting here? I'm not defending it. I'm just not surprised by it.
Well, the NFL has changed, and you're starting to see guys at a younger age retiring, first of all, because the money's big, and they think that money's going to last them forever, and in some cases it will if they handle it right. But in other cases, there are real medical issues here. I mean, that's the other conversation that I think Andrew Luck brings up, is how dangerous really is this game if a guy is willing to leave $58 million on the table, right? And so I think that gives more fuel to the fire that surrounds the whole, do they have to change the rules? What about, and they will. I think some rules will change next year. I think you're going to see the last year of the kickoff in the NFL this year.
This year already. I do think the kickoff is in danger. I don't know if it happens that fast, but I do agree that play is slowly getting phased out of the game.
Yeah. And there's going to be a...
And honestly, the kickoff, like, look, I played football growing up. I loved it.
I play a little ball.
You rarely want to see things change and all that. But honestly, eliminating the kickoff does provide some pretty interesting creative things they can do.
Well, remember this year, guys, there was a rule proposal to eliminate onside kicks altogether, and they were going to do a one-shot 4th-and-15 deal.
Right, that's kind of cool, right? Like, that spices things up a little bit. It changes things up where it's not a dramatic change. How often is onside kick even recovered? So I just think it does kind of actually open a window to some interesting possibilities for the league.
I like that idea. I think it was actually Vic Fangio and the Broncos.
So you got one option for the how would that work?
Basically, yeah, one time a game, you can take a shot at what would be the onside kick, but instead of it actually being a kick and you having all those players run at each other 15 yards apart, you have an actual play. It's 4th-and-15, I think, is what it was going to be, and you have one shot to complete it or not. And if you think about the odds on that, it's about the same probably as an onside kick. It's just a lot safer.
You complete it, keep it.
I bet it's better than a than an onside kick. The odds are very low on the onside kick now because of the other changes that they put into it. It is a particularly dangerous moment. I mean, this whole thing, the kickoff as it stands, and again, when you got guys who are willing to walk away from the game,
that tells you something.
I mean, we've seen it before, though. I mean, Barry Sanders walked away. Yeah. I mean, he would have crushed Walter Payton's record if he kept playing,
but he did it. Because he wanted, I mean, these guys, listen, this concussion thing has been around forever. Mm-hmm. These guys knew it. They saw their friends go through this. So this wasn't like, you know, everybody was denying it because it was like that code, you know, the warrior code that these guys have.
Right.
But it is definitely changing. So
guys, we forget Vontae Davis retired at halftime last year of a game.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yeah.
That might be some other things.
He was playing for the Bills. Yeah.
It's a very strange moment.
Like, get me out of here.
Right. I'm never coming back. All right. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
See you. Bye, Adam.
All right. Bears are going 14-2. Huge. All right. Thank you very much. Let's check in now with David Jennings. What's coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom?
Roe, the feds are going to go for the death penalty for the man accused of shooting up a synagogue in Pittsburgh.
Traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation. All right, that does it for us. Andrea Darlis is in the studio right now, and she's about to reporterize herself.
Hey, Rowanetta, long time no see.
Hi, Andrea.
Just watching summer slip away from us.
It's happening.
Wow, I miss you guys.
Miss you too.
It's nice to see you.
Excited for the show because we see that Mr. Rick Pearson has also entered the studio.
Rick Pearson, Jen Sabella from Block Club Chicago, guest tonight. They're killing it over there too, at Block Club. We're going to solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
We're going to solve all the world's problems, all the Chicago problems tonight in journalism. Pearson's like, oh, yeah, this is what it looks like at night in the studio. So, very psyched and should be a good show.
Excellent.
You guys have a good night.
It's all yours.
Is it all me? Oh, look how early we are. Wait a minute. I feel like we should talk for another minute or two.
No, we can talk for exactly 3, 2,